We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
They are not ready for prime time.
Prime time.
Prime time.
Prime time. That's the name.
Prime time.
Prime time.
What time is it? Showtime prime time.
It's XL prime time.
It is super scintillating sensational.
Featuring Joe C.
You got to get to the next, man.
Hacker.
It's not reality.
Matt Hayes.
Kind of see you as a guy who's very emotional.
And Leon Searcy.
Vast majority of my entertainment has to do with sports.
How you like me?
We got a little entertainment today out here at Splits in Orange Park, and so hopefully we'll entertain you for the next 3 hours, and you can get a little entertainment as far as the folks here at Splits are concerned. We are in Orange Park, Youngerman Circle, real easy to find us. This is the only day during the week that they open up in the noon hour, so if you want to drop on by, have a cold one, we are here with Tulane Lager. Tulane Lager is the Luke Bryan Lager, and we've been registering listeners to win a Tulane Lager guitar autographed by Luke Bryan. So you hear some of that Luke Bryan music a little bit later on today. JJ will carefully place it in different spots, but if you hear it, you call in and you will get registered for that Tulane Lager autographed guitar. As a matter of fact, they're going to have one of those guitars tonight here that they will give away along with a bunch of other stuff from the Tulane Lager ladies. Now, we got to get into all sorts of things. I don't want to tell you this in a negative way, fellas, but tomorrow is the end of college football as we know it for another year. Yes, there will be bowl games. Yes, there will be championships to be won. But our Saturdays will not be the same going forward. I said it to Leon earlier, and you kind of got sad, didn't you?
I did. Just, I got just emotional. A little tear came down my cheek a little bit.
It sucks.
It does suck. I mean, I remember, we were just talking about this off the air. I remember where I was the first game Miami played Alabama. I was in the Cigar Lounge in Atlanta. And I was feeling good about myself before the game. I was, you know, bragging and boasting about the Hurricanes being able to compete against the Mighty Tide.
You guys were going
to
score.
By halftime, you know, I was chewing my cigar. And Alabama faithful gave me the business because the game was over. So that's where I was. And now where we are right now, this is the last week of real college football. I mean, you got the championship this weekend. Got bowl games and everything, but it's just not the same.
So in some respects, you could say your season ended that day.
Oh, it did.
Whereas everyone else's is ending tomorrow.
I mean, look, and I understand, you know, that I'm getting older, a little wiser, but to me, this college football season went by super-duper slow. Normally, I'm very sad when college football season ends, and I am to an extent, but because Florida was absolutely terrible this year,
okay, I get
and loss after loss after loss.
So you wanted it to be
I mean, honestly, think about it. That Florida-Atlantic game feels like 6 months ago.
Oh,
with
man.
Everything that has transpired.
Well, yeah. I guess if you put it that way, you do want it to be over. Well, I'll go with you on this. I wanted them to get rid of Mullen as soon as possible because I don't like the McElwain 7 days. I don't think anything will top that unless you get like a massive allegation or legal thing against you and then you're out. But this one happened in a hurry for Mullen to get to be done before the season was over.
The bottom line, Matt, there are 10 conference championship games, and there's a Cal-USC game. Well, that'll be riveting. 2 4-7 teams ending their year.
All right, hang on.
Because that game was canceled with COVID.
Before Matt throws the opinion out there, someone just brought a rolling suitcase with a bowling ball in it. Okay.
Dude, I'm telling you right now, this place is – I would absolutely roll here. This place is nice.
Let me tell you what inspired me this morning, all right? I was going back and forth all morning between Brian Kelly faking a Southern accent last night.
Say what?
And the movie Kingpin. Mm-hmm. Because I knew we were going to be here at Splits in Orange Park. I'm a big fan of Woody Harrelson and his work in the movie Kingpin. It just happened to be on, like, Encore 7 today or whatever movie channel it was on. So because we're going to bowl, couldn't find Big Lebowski, Matt, but I found Kingpin – to get fired up for today's festivities.
This is a sweet joint, I'll tell you that right now.
This is.
Down here, and I mean, it's kind of like a Dave and Buster's, but it's got, how many, 14 bowling alleys?
Yeah. 14 bowling alleys.
14 lanes, they got a little special party area back here also.
Yeah, it's open, and it's got a bar, full bar. Yeah, it's
and they got laser tag.
If you're depressed about college football ending,
yeah.
Come over here. Sit down at the
Wait a minute. They have laser tag?
They got laser tag.
They got everything here, man.
Well, we got to do a two-on-two battle, laser tag style.
That'd be fine.
Me and Leon against you guys.
Yeah, I think I like our chances.
I do, too.
Wait. We're too big.
First of all, we're too big of a target,
all right? So, I mean, we're not going to be hard to miss.
Yeah.
I'm going to use you as a shield.
Oh, here we go.
Get them.
So, anyway.
You don't move as fast.
I don't move as fast.
You're a much bigger target.
Exactly.
Back to college football. You know why it's so great? You know why it's so passionate, the sport?
Right.
It's such a small window. It's 3 months. It's all it is. Mm-hmm. And it's unlike any other sport. It's unlike the NFL. It's unlike baseball. It's unlike basketball. It's unlike football. It's even unlike college basketball. College basketball starts in November, ends in April.
Yeah.
Football is literally the small window where you go full bore from week one all the way for 3 months. And that's what the concern is about the playoff. Is when you have the playoff, but it goes to 12 teams, you know, is everybody going full bore in the heads at week, not players and teams.
Sure.
Fans, are they going full bore on week one because they know, all right, well, he can lose this week and he'll be all right the next week.
Yeah.
That's always been the big drawing point for college football.
I mean, that's what got my adrenaline rushing when I was at Miami.
Right.
Single elimination.
Yeah.
One game, your season is over with. Two games, you can forget about it. But, I mean, I just – teams like Alabama, the Georgias, Clemson's, Ohio State's, all those of the world, I can only imagine what those kids go through week in and week out, big game after big game,
right.
On the stage, on the TV.
Right, right.
I mean, that feeling right there, you can't amount to that. Because in the NFL, you got 16, 17 games. You lose a game, coach says, okay, to the next game.
You can get right games.
No,
but
exactly.
They don't get right games.
There's no preseason.
Right.
You walk right into it. That's why I love.
See,
I love
the one you're done type of feeling that we all had back then, and there was only one game at the end. But like we were talking about yesterday with baseball, this brings more markets further along in the season. More teams have more things.
No question. I like it. I'm just saying that's the fear.
Yeah.
The fan bases will be like, well, this is.
They would always
what
say
used to
it would ruin the regular season.
Right.
Right.
Right. And the regular season is it's unlike anything any sport has, and that's the concern. I mean, it would almost be like the tournament in college basketball. If all of a sudden you say, "Yeah, we're going to go to 12 teams instead of 65," and then you're like, "Wait a second. Wait, what?
Stakes get real.
Yeah, everything changes at that point.
I mean, I know this will never happen because we're maybe going to get to 12. Who even knows that? But my thought at one point was 16 teams. Can you imagine what it would be like tonight and tomorrow with 10 conference championship games? Because there are 10. Where the winner of those 10 games would get automatic bids into a 16-team tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You then take the other six at-large teams, if you will, the six non-conference champions for your 16-team tournament. That would mean Utah State and San Diego State tomorrow, what is that, in the WAC championship game, would be for a spot in a 16-team playoff. That would be incredible.
Yeah, which
now, obviously, it'll never happen, and that's unfortunate. Tomorrow's already huge. It could be so much bigger if they were to ever do something like that.
Well, it makes the what is a championship Saturday that not even just a get-in spot, part of the playoffs. It really does. Now, that was always my model because I wanted to get to 16.
Well, the 10 conference champions.
Yeah, 10 champions. And I felt like at the very least it checked every box, right? Because you just mentioned WAC championship.
Right.
It checks every box, and that way no one can bitch and moan about it. You know what I mean? Because
everybody in D1 has a chance.
In a conference, that's the argument right now. That's
which would force Notre Dame to get in a conference.
That's why the playoff is struggling right now. That's why they can't lock it down because – the Alliance, the ACC, the Pac-12, and the Big 12, they want automatic qualifiers. In other words, conference champions. The SEC, the Big 12, and Notre Dame don't want any.
Yeah.
They're better off with best 12, all right? So if you go with what was originally proposed by the management team, the working management team that brought the original thing that we had back in August, and everybody's like, oh, my God, they have a playoff. Here we go. If you go with that, okay, the first four teams get a bye, and then you got 5 versus 12. So right now, currently, you'd have first weekend of games would be BYU at Oklahoma State, Michigan State at Notre Dame, Oregon at Ohio State, another little rematch Baylor at Ole Miss, and then those winners would go and play the other four.
I got no problem with any of that.
I love that.
First round games all on campus. By the way, that's going to happen. The first round games on campus has been they're all on board for that.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question: the top, okay, let's say the 12 team playoff. Is there any team on there that has 3 losses? That's my only concern.
At that point, no, they're all 2. But
I
will say this. You also are looking at teams like Iowa. Iowa is at 13 right now. They could get into the playoff. Pittsburgh's at 15 right now, two losses. They could get in the playoff if they win the ACC, and they win it impressively. So there's teams. Utah's 9-3. They're number 17. They beat Oregon again. They could jump into the top 12.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's okay to be in the room, but everybody shouldn't get a seat at the table.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree.
I think the playoffs should be special.
Whereas if I do the 10 conference champions, then you might have a three-loss.
Yeah. Then you've got literally five guaranteed losses in the first round. You don't even have to look at it. They're losses.
In college basketball, you have 20 guaranteed losses.
Right, but
everybody gets in.
But basketball is different because one guy can carry a team in basketball. You cannot have one guy in college football carry a team.
Let me ask you this, and I have no idea. The Sun Belt Championship game, App State's
playing. Like C.J. McCollum, what he did to Duke.
Right.
You can't have that in college football.
App State's playing Louisiana tomorrow. I'm sure a lot of Gator fans will at least give it a look-see to see what Billy Napier is going to offer. Let's say Louisiana wins the Sun Belt. They get the 14th seed in a 16-team tournament. Louisiana then would play, what would that mean, the Michigan or Alabama? Louisiana's not going to beat Michigan or Alabama, but wouldn't that be interesting to see what would happen?
I am right there on the edge of if you crown every conference champion, there's, like I just said earlier, there's no complaining, right? But then I also know the product's the product, and the SEC and
TV's not
Matt,
paying you $1.1 billion a year for that.
Right.
I can tell you that right now.
But like you'd be kicking to the curb a marginal team that belongs in there, or you'd be kicking to the curb a really good SEC team that belongs.
Well, no, that's what the six wild card spots would be.
Well,
for.
I know, but what I'm saying,
right?
Is
but
is
his
that
point is it, his point is it could be the third SEC team like Oklahoma, and they're out
as opposed
at 11-2 they're out or 10-2 they're out because you got to get Louisiana in.
Right, and just imagine if we had that. Let's just say we fast forward a year from now, and this is real, right? Instead of us just hypothetically talking, you'd be pissed off. You'd be going, "Are you kidding me?"
Especially if it was Florida, you'd be beside yourself. That's kind of that's what the argument is now, right now. That's why it hasn't been approved because the SEC and the Big 12 and Notre Dame says no, none. Let's just go all at large, all of them, and that's the way it should be. You get the 12 best teams.
When are they going to say it's 12 and it starts when?
It's definitely 12, okay?
Because the way
and it's probably going to start after the 24th season, but they're still working on the format. Like the Alliance wants automatic qualifiers because the Alliance doesn't want 12 at the 12 best because if they do, they know the SEC is going to dominate it.
Yeah.
So that's what they're worried about.
It's like I know you're doing your reporting. You're doing a killer job at Saturday Down South, but I'm listening to Heather Dennis, and she says they want to walk out of this room with a decision because they don't want to kick the can down the road.
But they've been kicking it for months.
It sounds to me like they kicked the can down the road.
The last
again.
Three meetings, starting in July, then the one in September, now the one this month, they've all been delayed because of the Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner of the Big 12, actually came out and publicly said, "We should have had this done in September. Unfortunately, we haven't." And the reason is the Alliance.
I mean, you got five Power Five championship games. Obviously, Alabama, Georgia, which we're going to spend a lot of time on. Michigan, Iowa certainly has relevance. And Baylor, Oklahoma State has relevance. The other two, the Pac-12 championship game, the one tonight between Oregon and Utah, means nothing in the scheme of the playoff.
But it's still
good. My point is, it's still good, and that's all great.
Yeah, yeah.
It means nothing regarding the 14 playoff.
That I get.
If you were to have a conference champion get in, Oregon, Utah winner tonight gets in, Wake Forest, Pitt winner, and the ACC tomorrow night gets in. Instead, who really cares other than a Wake Forest alum or a Pitt alum about the ACC championship game tomorrow night?
Yeah, I get you.
I care. What do you mean? Who cares?
You're going to watch Wake Forest and Pitt.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Please give me a detailed report.
Blow
on
by
that.
Blow. Absolutely.
You do that.
You're going to stop talking about my conference, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, like here's the thing. Whoever wants to watch it, that is the essence of college football for almost everybody else out there. And in this particular year, that includes the Floridas of the world because they ain't sniffing a natty. They're nowhere near a natty. So take what you can get. You think that. But the ACC has been spoiled by Clemson at the top, and the Pac-12 is at the very least looking at two very good football teams in Oregon and Utah. I soak it up. I watched that Utah-Oregon game the last go-around. You want to talk about an atmosphere in Utah?
I'm telling you right now,
it was electric.
That's one of the – and that's what people don't get. Like, Utah, Salt Lake, that little stadium in Salt Lake City, which was the Olympic one before they kind of, retrofitted it to be a 55,000-seat stadium – that place is
so cool.
Absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
You get a first-round game there in Utah,
yeah.
You got an SEC team going in there, and Florida's going in there, what, in 2 years, right? Yeah. Where do you guys see what that place
well,
is
you
like?
Well, you guys are kind of making my point for me. If that game tonight were for a
playoff
spot,
yeah, I'm not arguing with
it
that.
Would be absolutely incredible, but it's not for a playoff spot.
It could be for Oregon. If things happen the right way, it could
yeah.
be for
I mean,
Oregon.
If I win money or Powerball on Saturday, I'm probably not coming to work on Monday.
It's not that hard, actually. If Georgia beats Alabama, which we all think is going to happen, right?
Michigan would
Georgia
have to
beats
lose.
Alabama. No, Michigan can win. Oregon can still get in there. Of course they can.
I would love to hear this. How?
Okay. So you got Georgia over Alabama, which everybody agrees is going to happen,
okay.
right? Michigan over Iowa, which everybody agrees is going to happen,
yep.
right? Okay. Houston over Cincinnati.
Houston's
a really good team. Bearcats are gone. Notre Dame's not getting in at 11-1. They're not getting in.
Yeah, the Brian Kelly factor.
It's not even the Brian Kelly factor. Right. They don't have the resume.
They lost to the team
that
just got
knocked
out.
Win is a loss to Cincinnati, yeah. so they're not getting in. So then you've got two more teams out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get two more. So then you look at the Big 12. If Baylor beats Oklahoma State or Oklahoma State beats Baylor, Oklahoma State's probably going to get in if they win. If Baylor beats Oklahoma State, then you're down to one. Then you're choosing between Ohio State, Oregon, and Alabama. Who's got the best resume?
Yeah, the one
Oregon.
That won most recently. Yeah.
Well, not only that, Oregon won at Ohio State, and Alabama hasn't beaten anyone.
Oregon has by far and away the worst loss of those three, and it's not even close.
But and won a
they lost to a terrible Stanford team.
Right,
but
it's also about what you've won. It's also about what you've won.
You think they'll put Oregon in over Alabama?
Yeah, I do.
You're insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
No way.
I wouldn't have any problem.
Alabama hasn't beaten anyone. They've literally beaten no one.
Yeah, they haven't.
So Alabama's 3 right now. Oregon's 10. You're telling me an Alabama loss to Georgia and an Oregon win over Utah is going to propel Oregon.
With Cincinnati losing.
6 spots.
Yes.
No way.
The other three that were getting knocked out.
Why are you so sold on Alabama? Yeah. What has Alabama done to get
done
to earn that spot?
Other than they're in the SEC.
Bias.
Nothing. Literally nothing.
Preach.
This is when
there's no way Oregon would get in over Alabama. I hope that scenario happens.
He's
and then
over
I call
that big
you,
SEC flag way
and I call you on Saturday.
This is when every other fan of,
hey,
of
you know,
the SEC
flies
their flag for Alabama.
Look,
Alabama doesn't want them.
I can raise my voice and hoop and holler about Oregon, and they're great, and this, that, and the other. There is absolutely no way Oregon would get in over Alabama.
Let me establish one thing. Your voice is always
right. If there's anyone who's raising voices here, let's get very serious here, right?
Yeah, no way.
So all we're looking at is the possibility of if more carnage happens. Alabama, really, other than the fact that they were able to storm back against Auburn and the fact that they were able to beat Ole Miss earlier in the year.
It's a top 10 win.
Yeah, it was a good win. It really was a good win. But there's nothing more than that. Alabama normally
What's
has a
Arkansas
resume
ranked?
That you cannot throw darts at.
I would bet you Alabama's beat more ranked teams than Oregon. It's not even close.
Probably, because the SEC typically
But I thought Oregon had a better resume.
Yeah. Well, they got one loss.
No, they have two.
No,
they have two losses. They got the Utah loss.
They went into Ohio State and won.
Yeah, they would turn around.
What's Alabama done other than that?
And then they would turn around and beat the team.
Give me Alabama's win that's impressive.
Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's
Ole Miss at home.
Yeah.
Okay. Arkansas's ranked.
At home.
Okay. I hope your scenario happens, and then I'll call you when Alabama gets in.
Well, you know, one thing about Alabama getting in is that the television loves them, the committee probably loves them, and they don't want to tick off Nick, okay? So there's a real good chance that if it is two lost teams and Alabama looks really good against Georgia, then they would have a chance to get in.
Of course they would, yes.
Yeah, there's again, we always find arguments that you know make the most sense as far as how it's going to go down.
I still think they can beat Georgia, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me tell you, I agree with Matt. Everybody's talking about Georgia. I do, but I know Kirby's going to have them ready, and I understand that Georgia wants to get over that Alabama hurdle, and this would be a way to end Alabama's season so they would not possibly see them again. But I got to be honest, and watching ESPN and SEC Network and the coverage getting ready for this game, the overwhelming majority of people on television that give Alabama no chance to win this game, to me, is mind-blowing. With what Bryce Young has done this year and that defense, and if Robinson's healthy in the backfield, you got two great receivers in Williams and Mechie. I just cannot believe no one really is giving Alabama a shot to win the game tomorrow.
It's one of the smaller point spreads that Georgia's faced here recently, so I do think Vegas has given them a lot of respect. This is the first time since 2008, I believe, that they have been an underdog in a game. Think about that. I think it's I think it's in every game. And so it's been a hell of a long time since they have been in this situation. I think most people are sitting on the sidelines going, gosh, man, Alabama, how could we count them out? They still could have a chance. If they're a less than a touchdown pick, Vegas is respecting them big time.
Hey, and Leon, I know what you're going to say. It's rhetorical, but I'm asking anyway.
No, you don't, but go ahead.
Well, I think I know what you're going to say. Georgia could lose tomorrow. But in the back of their mind, they're human, in the back of their mind, they know that they're probably still getting in. Alabama more than likely has to win tomorrow. That has to be something of a factor. Even if it's a 1% factor, Alabama needs it. Georgia doesn't necessarily need it.
No, Georgia needs it. Just for they need it for the psyche alone. I mean,
we're not going down this rabbit hole again.
No, Georgia has to win it for the psyche alone.
But right? Not to get in.
I understand that, but who's been their daddy over the last half a decade? Alabama. Alabama's been their daddy. They've owned them. They've had opportunities in championship games, playoff games, they've lost out. Just for the mere fact alone, you've got to win this game against Alabama. Not only you got to win it because you don't want to see them again. You lose it and you see them again.
You give them life?
You give them life? No, Listen, you got to put this. You got to put this to bed.
There's only so many times you can extinguish the enemy. And
Auburn had the chance, and they let it slip through their. They went out of bounds.
Yeah,
and that saved Alabama's season.
Brian Harsin went from 60 minutes of wait a minute. This is what they call the Iron Bowl. To at the end, walking off the field, rubbing his forehead as if he had aged 40 years and four quarters. It was incredible what happened to him and the War Eagle fan base, that's for sure. All right, so we're going to talk a lot of college football today. We would love for y'all to jump in on it. We got to talk about some coaching rumors, particularly with what may be going on in Oklahoma. We've got all these games to get into. We'd love for you to hit the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Give us some thoughts on what you're looking at for tomorrow's action and tonight with the Pac-12. And beyond that, we'll get to the Jaguars against the Rams. But we are hanging out at Splits in Orange Park. We're on Youngerman Circle, Argyle Forest area. All you do is you hang a right off of Blanding Boulevard if you're heading west, and you just cruise around about a quarter of a mile, and you'll see Splits on the right-hand side. You can come on in, get you a cold two-lane lager. Fellas, when I was testing the line here yesterday, I might have sampled a two-lane lager.
Maybe.
I might have.
Or two or three.
Yeah, just a good lager so you can drop on by. And don't forget tonight, if you want to come out to Splits, you can make plans because they will be giving away that Luke Bryan autographed guitar along with plenty other goodies from Tulane. So,
hey, can I ask you a personal question real quick? What pound ball do you use?
What now?
What pound ball do you use
15.
When you're bowling?
15.
A 15-pounder. Mm-hmm. Wow, all right. Yeah. Because I was looking at the balls over there. I think I'm going in the 12 to 13 range.
That's not a shot.
His balls are different in person.
Leon, yeah. When you bowl, what's your
boulder?
Bowl?
I use a boulder. I just roll the boulder down.
You just roll the boulder down there.
Nah. 15-pound
15-pound ball is a heavy ball.
That's what I use, 15.
I don't like going to the 16 for whatever.
Everybody uses 15 except me?
Yeah.
Maybe that's telling me something. I don't know.
Well, typically, okay, like a one-pound difference for me, for whatever reason, the 16 is just a little too much. I don't know why. I don't like fingertip bowling. I just like a regular, the fingers in there. And the 12 – like, I can remember being a kid in a bowling league with a 12-pound ball, and they would bounce off the pins.
Yeah.
All right. So
interesting.
That's what you're looking at.
Because I haven't bowled in so long, I got to figure out what feels right here in a second.
Well, Dee Dee here at Splits says that she will set us up somewhere where we can bowl and have a good time today. All right, it's XL Primetime from Splits in Orange Park.
Well, they were in the spot, 2 years ago or whenever it was, 2017, whenever we played in the national championship game. So I think they have been in the spot, and I think Kirby's done a really good job the whole time he's been there.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
That was Nick Saban, his Alabama Crimson Tide, taking on the Georgia Bulldogs. You'll be able to hear it right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM tomorrow afternoon. And one thing that I didn't think I'd ever see this. Nick Saban looked like a school kid celebrating that win over Auburn in the Iron Bowl. He was gleeful. He was like, if you go to the end of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas and you just couldn't wipe the smile off the face of the Grinch, that's what Saban looked like Saturday night, as he was just so happy for his players. He's going into this game feeling like he's got another life as far as the season is concerned. But if they do lose this one, they will be a two-loss squad. It'll make it tough for them.
Well, I mean, the fact is he went 97 yards to end the game.
Yeah.
I mean, if Auburn, if your boy Tank,
Tank Bigsby
drops down in bounds,
I know.
Alabama is two losses, and Auburn wins the Iron Bowl, and it's one of the great upsets in college football this year. Tank doesn't go out of bounds. And give Bryce Young and Alabama credit. They played 2.5 quarters of that game without Jameson Williams, the wide receiver who got called for targeting. That's kind of the reason in college football you don't put good players on special teams. You lose your star wide receiver on a punt coverage play due to targeting, but they won despite of that. Brian Robinson gets hurt at running back. They won despite of that. When you have somebody on the ground, Matt, when you have a contender on the ground and you can put the final nail in their coffin, you need to do it. If I'm Alabama now, it's almost like I have a second shot at life after Auburn didn't finish the job last week. That's why, to me, I won't call it a dangerous game for Georgia because, again, they get in the playoff with a loss. But I think Alabama's got to be coming into this game with a lot of confidence because this is their second chance at life.
Well, first off, I don't think if Tank Bigsby gets out of bounds, it's a lock that Auburn wins that game. You call that last drive differently then. So, I mean, you still got a long way to go. You got less time to do it, but you call it differently. They were very methodical in what they were doing in that drive. The odds certainly would be against them, but I certainly wouldn't put it. It's a lifetime in college football. I wouldn't put it past Alabama to score there. I will say this. The one weakness, if you have to say that, at Georgia, we've been talking about it all year, is they don't cover that well in the secondary. But the problem is nobody can block them up front. So it's very easy for those guys to make mistakes in the secondary. Now, Alabama struggled on the right side of the line, and they looked terrible on the right side of the line against Auburn. So I don't know what they do. Do they go into some max protect stuff? Do they just stick Jameson Williams and Mechie on the outside and say, you guys got to win. You two guys got to win because we got to protect. And if they can do that and they can win on the outside, I think it's going to be very interesting. I also think, you know, we have not seen Bryce Young in the quarterback run game all season. We've seen him scramble. We've seen him pick up yards that way. We haven't seen him actually doing zone read stuff. And that was specifically done because they have nothing behind him. Because if he got hurt in the run game, then they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're here. You're in the SEC championship game. It's for the SEC championship. It's for a spot in the playoff. Now I think we might see some Bryce Young zone read stuff.
Yeah. I feel like Bryce Young has won and lost the Heisman in a lot of people's minds a bunch of different times. He was a betting favorite. He wasn't a betting favorite. He's had good games. He hasn't had good games. He might have had a Heisman moment the other night. We don't quite know. And the other guy that has played his best football in his entire time in college is Stetson Bennett, and we're not talking about him. Bryce Young is a dynamic player, but Stetson Bennett's just done his job. Who would have thought, Leon, that Kirby Smart had JT Daniels sitting there, and I know JT Daniels was dinged up here and there, but was healthy at a point, could have put him back in and decided not to, and has rolled with Stetson Bennett ever since.
Got rolled with a high hand.
Yeah.
I mean, JT Daniels is clearly the better quarterback, especially with the long ball and the accuracy, which got rolled with a high hand. I've been in this type of game right here, you know, with my senior year. Mm-hmm. When Florida State was number one, I was number two. They gave us absolutely no shot against Florida State.
Right.
Florida State was favoring in that game. They were at home. Now, this is a neutral site, SEC championship game. They were at home. They were number one. We were number two. And our strategy going to this game, is Alabama has to do the same thing. You got to hit them early. It's like a prize fight. You got to come out swinging early. Run the ball, establish. First of all, you got to establish the line of scrimmage. This great defensive line that Georgia has right now, if I'm the coordinator of Alabama, I'm going after them. Because attack their strength, first and foremost. Run the ball. Attack their strength. And get them guessing a little bit. Run the ball five yards here, 7 yards here, clip them there, clip them there. I will establish the run real early and let our offensive line know, in their mind, this great defense attack, this great defensive line they have,
right,
make them look weak. Run the ball, establish the run. They hit them in the mouth fast.
It's a great plan.
Yeah, you got to
punch them out.
Whatever that strength is, attack it.
See, but here's
attack
the fight.
They also, Brian Robinson's also hurt for them. He's not going to be 100%, so that's an issue. They've got one guy behind him who is a scholarship tailback. They have one guy actually on the roster who's playing running back, who's not a walk-on. They got walk-ons behind him, so
it's hard to believe.
It's going to be very hard for them to run the ball.
Well, I'm going to give you an example. When I was at Miami, we played Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
We had a 10-play drive, right? We ran the ball nine times, nine freaking times, and we scored a touchdown. That's how you.
But you
do
had
it.
You on your offensive
well,
line.
Well, I'm just saying. I had the combination. I had Mario on there. Mario was
right,
on the line.
But they've got Evan Neal. And other than that, yeah. It's a lot of if.
Yeah, I got you.
See, but my thing, too, about Georgia is they haven't lined up across the line of scrimmage from anybody that could match them physicality-wise. And I don't know about the Alabama O-line. I know about the Alabama D-line with Anderson and with Mathis, Christian Harris, a linebacker, battle at strong safety. You got dudes over there that are going to be in the NFL. Alabama, what they're lacking on offense, they have guys on defense. Fildarian Mathis is a monster. You don't hear much about him because it's all Jordan Davis all the time, but Mathis is going to play a lot of years in the league. Anderson is as well. Christian Harris is a terrific linebacker at Alabama with battle at safety. So, and that's just four guys. They got a lot more.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, and we've said this on repeat every year or every week, Georgia hasn't had to come from behind. They're always in the lead, or they're always tied like they were with Florida, but the Florida offense, even the Clemson offense in week one, was never going to really threaten them. What happens tomorrow if Bryce Young comes out and hits Williams or hits Mechie for a 50-yard touchdown, and all of a sudden that Georgia offense now going up against an Alabama defense has to go out of their element a little bit? Are they going to be able to run the ball as successfully against that Alabama front seven as they have the entire year?
I'll tell you this, to your point. You know, we're talking about Bryce Young. This is a Heisman game for him, and it is. The best player on the field is Will Anderson. It's not even close.
Oh, Will Anderson.
He's the best guy in college football.
Oh,
it's not even close.
So
he's only a sophomore, so he's not draft eligible. He's got 14.5 sacks and 27.5 tackles for loss. 27.5!
If they reload, which is what Bama usually does, he will win the Heisman next year.
He will be the obviously first. It's Bryce Young's Heisman thing, but by the end of this game, if what I think happens, what will happen, because Georgia's not that good at tackle. Wait and see what Will Anderson does in that game. People are going to say, wait a second.
One man
that's the best
crew.
Player in the country.
I feel like he's the best player in the SEC, and you're probably right when you start looking around. And I say best player in the SEC.
As far as pure player,
more than
football
Jordan
player.
Davis and some of these other guys.
That's 31, right?
Yeah.
He's good. All right, now let me give you a saucy nug, and I actually can't remember if I gave you this one earlier, but I'll add to it if I have. But a little saucy nug
saucy
from the
nug.
SEC championship game. The last time Georgia trailed in a game, was at the 9:43 mark in the second quarter against Tennessee.
Wow. Saucy okay. nugs.
Yowza.
The 9:43 mark in the second quarter against Tennessee, they were down 10-7. Now, let me just give you a couple. Might as well go ahead and do them right now since we're all over it. Here's another one. Stetson Bennett has had at least a 14-point lead in every fourth quarter he's played in this year.
Saucy never chased. Nugs. He's never had to chase points.
That's a
problem.
Saucy nug right there.
That's a guy who's you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, probably like a 5.5 or 6 as a thrower.
Yeah.
He's never had to chase points.
So
never.
As much as I've, like, been converted, I feel like I've been converted. I called Stetson Bennett the wine bottle forever. I didn't look at him as an athletic guy at all. And now I'm looking at a guy that can make plays. And even JJ and I were arguing about Stetson. Dude does what he can do, and he does it very, very well. And he actually can motor and move a little bit. He gets pressure in the pocket. He can turn it into some positive yards. And he doesn't try and overwhelm anybody. So how about this? When you're talking about saucy nugs, all right, so he's had the lead in the fourth quarter every game he's played in, Maddie,
right.
as a starter.
Right.
But he's not been put under pressure. In the fourth quarter, he's 6 of 10 for 83 yards. Think about that, fellas, for the season. 6 of 10 for 83 yards. And Bryce Young, this past week, had 10 passes in that drive.
He's
over
thrown
Auburn.
10 passes in 12 games in the fourth quarter.
Saucy nugs.
That's
so
hard
think about
to believe.
That. It's well, the point is they're so far ahead of people.
Yeah.
They're literally just running the ball and just running out the clock. If they get to a fourth quarter game,
it's going to be
very interesting to see what happens.
He's not battle tested.
No.
He's not battle tested.
No, we've been saying this all year, but the problem is no one can get them to the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
No one can get them to the point where he's stressed and he has to make a 3rd-and-9 throw in the fourth quarter when the game's on the line, the crowd's going crazy. He's never been in that point.
Well, you know what I want to see? I want to see something go bad for Georgia where they're trailing in the third quarter or even the fourth, but certainly by the third. And is it here we go again against Alabama? As much as Kirby's accomplished, as much as Georgia has done, and as great as Kirby has been there in 6 years, what is Georgia's kryptonite? It is the Alabama Crimson Tide. From the 2nd-and-26 to win the national championship to whatever that thing was where Justin Fields faked the punt, they've had a lot of really odd things happen. when they play Alabama in that stadium.
True. You are correct. It's like, but Alabama's like everybody's kryptonite. You know, they right. break everybody's
To be fair, right, right.
At they're, some point.
They're everybody's and, problem,
and
right.
Georgia has come as close to beating them as anybody.
Well, let me ask you guys this real quick. I got two Heisman voters here. Is Bryce Young, with a win, clearly the winner? And what happens if he loses tomorrow?
Gosh, I wish I could say clearly because I want to keep an open mind. And I know that this is a different year because I don't really think anyone has just, like, overwhelmed anybody that's on the stat sheet or in games that says, it's mine, it's mine.
Are you serious?
I feel that way.
He's got 40 touchdowns against 4 interceptions.
I totally get it. He has been, at times, really, really impressive. But that begs the question, the original question, if he loses, is he not a
If he loses, I don't.
And it depends.
Well, if he wins, he's clearly the Heisman.
Wins, yes. If he wins, it's a lock.
Yes.
If he loses, does that bring Matt Corral in?
Well,
does that bring C.J. Stroud
in? It doesn't bring Corral in. It doesn't bring Stroud in. The only thing it could bring in possibly is Hutchinson.
Yes. And Kenny Pickett.
And Kenny, nah, but probably it probably brings Hutchinson into the four is what it probably does.
If Hutchinson has a great game.
If he has a great game. He has 4 sacks. They have the last game of the night. You've got to remember that. So if he goes in there and has 4 sacks against Iowa and they rout Iowa, it certainly brings him in.
And that would be back-to-back Saturdays for him, having huge Saturdays.
On big moments.
Yeah, which, by the way, Bryce Young would have back-to-back huge Saturdays, too. So it's not like I want to – all I'm saying is that he has been special, and I hate always gravitating to the quarterback, but it's hard to argue.
I will say this. I can guarantee you no matter what happens Saturday, Will Anderson's on my ballot.
Yeah.
He's one of the three guys on my ballot.
I think we probably both have said this at one point in the middle of the season. He is the best player, you just said, in the nation.
Yeah.
I said next year he'll win the Heisman is what I believe.
Only a sophomore, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's go on. All right. So obviously Georgia-Alabama. Let me ask you guys this. The other three teams where it's win and you're probably in. Well, it's win, and we'll see what happens. Michigan is in a win-and-you're-in scenario.
Yes.
Some people, I know Matt is probably in the minority here, so that's why I changed, but some people, if not most people, will tell you that Cincinnati is in with a win.
Nah,
and then where does Oklahoma State lie against Baylor?
My opinion is now, for 2 weeks running, if Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma and beats Baylor, they leap Cincinnati.
Yep. Okay, so then, all right, so, but if Georgia beats Alabama, Cincinnati then would still be in.
No.
No.
Yeah, I disagree with that because, again, all right, so Georgia's in with a win.
Right.
Michigan's in with a win.
Right.
We're going to say Oklahoma State's in with a win.
Yeah.
And if Alabama loses, who's the four?
Well, it depends on how badly Georgia beats Alabama. What if it's a 33-30 game and it's a game-winning field goal?
Well, I have no idea. I'm just saying what if they lose? What if they lose by
If it's a 10? Close game.
If they lose by 10 points.
If it's a close game and it's clear that Alabama not only has played Georgia better than anyone, but Alabama's as good as Georgia, they'll get in over Cincinnati.
Yeah, honestly, that's a vine you've been on for a while.
And
we'll see what happens.
And it's because of what we have all said. It's funny, whenever we decide that we want to kind of stick up for the Cincinnatis of the world or the UCFs of the world, there's nothing wrong with that argument, giving an undefeated team a chance to go play for it. No problem at all. But if you look in the eye test, most of the time people will go, I know Alabama's better than Cincinnati. Why the hell are they not playing for in the college football playoff despite what their record says they are? They're a better football team.
Well, Alabama would be better than Oklahoma State, too. Oklahoma State tomorrow,
I would take Alabama.
Of
but I'm
course
saying,
you would.
But I'm saying Oklahoma State at least it would be a team that could get them into the second half, even in the fourth quarter.
Watch Spencer Sanders. That dude is fun to watch. They've got a really good defense. In fact, their defensive coordinator might be one of the candidates for the Florida job under Billy Napier.
I know we go over this all the time, but, man, it's like, how do you look at Miami of Ohio, Murray State, Indiana, Temple, UCF, Navy, Tulane, Tulsa, South Florida, SMU, ECU. How do you look at that and say, yeah, they deserve that?
What's Oklahoma State's best win?
Plus, I also think that, you know, they're going to have a lot of problems getting past Houston.
Not better than the Notre Dame win for Cincinnati.
That Houston game is going to be good. Houston's going to give them a lot of issues.
Well, Houston's in the top 20 in the country. That's why, to me, if you have Cincinnati number 4 right now, and they beat a top 20 team, I was voted on by the committee on Tuesday, how do you drop them with a top 20 win? It's not like Houston's 7-5.
I'm just telling you.
Houston, were they 10-2 and number 19 in the country?
Yeah, I like the fact that they do have a good game.
I actually think they're 11-1, Houston.
11-1. I mean, how are you going to drop Cincinnati with a win over a top 20 team? I don't see how they can do
that. Because Houston's loss is to Texas Tech.
You ready?
Oklahoma State lost to a 5-loss Iowa State team.
Yeah, but you want to know why they can do it? Because they're the committee. And that's a subjective
decision. Right. You know why else they can do it? Because – Because ESPN wants good games. They want people watching.
But again, I don't think Cincinnati being in or Oklahoma State being in is going to sway the ratings needle. I'm not going to be more likely to tune in to see the Oklahoma State Cowboys than I would to be the Cincinnati Bearcats.
I bet if Oklahoma State and Cincinnati get in, they'll be the two least watched semifinals of all of them.
The problem
since
is,
the playoffs
is like,
started.
You're looking at it from a diehard fan's point of view. They're looking at it from that overall eyeballs casual fan that's walking through Splits Bowling Alley right now.
Right. It won't even be close, too.
Oh, wait a minute. College football playoffs on?
Right.
I don't know anybody of any. Oh, there's Alabama.
It will be the worst watched semifinal since it started in 2014.
But that's my point. That's why I said earlier this week, if it's Ohio State or if it's Penn State, that resonates nationally, I could see them jumping Cincinnati. Oklahoma State doesn't resonate nationally.
Well, you have to measure.
That doesn't move the needle.
I know, but they're trying to figure everything out. Is this part of the Power Five? And are they the conference champion of the Power Five? And that counts. That has weight in that room. And then you've got to figure out where's the best story. How many eyeballs are going to come along with them? All that kind of stuff.
The best story would be Cincinnati.
Well, in a lot of people's minds, it probably would. And look, I don't mind giving them a chance, and I even think Cincinnati would be competitive in this game, not swatted around
by anybody.
Oh, my
God, they'll
get
crushed. Georgia will annihilate them.
But Georgia's going to annihilate anybody,
exactly.
Matt.
Yeah.
That's
his point. I don't agree with that. I just don't agree with that.
The stat we just gave.
Is Georgia going to annihilate Ohio State if Ohio State's a four?
No. That's not – no, I'm talking about Oklahoma State versus Cincinnati.
No, but I'm talking about Ohio State. If Ohio State's a four, is Georgia going to annihilate them?
No. Are they going to annihilate Oklahoma State?
No, I don't think they are.
Okay, well, I know – here's what I know. I know Cincinnati goes into South Bend at night and beat Notre Dame for their only loss of the year. That's what I know. And that win over Notre Dame is better than any win Oklahoma State has.
It's so funny because
I don't think it is.
So you're saying Oklahoma is better than Notre Dame?
Yes, I am saying that.
Based on what?
Based on watching Notre Dame play and who Notre Dame's beaten.
And
Notre Dame's entire resume.
Oh, I thought Brian Kelly was coach of the year
yesterday. Notre Dame's entire resume hack is a loss
Wait
to Cincinnati.
A minute. I thought Brian Kelly was the greatest thing on earth, getting them to 11-1. You're kind of contradicting yourself.
How am I contradicting myself? They're 11-1.
Yeah.
Any coach that's 11-1 is a pretty good coach, hack.
Yeah.
Any coach that's won 54 games in the last 5 years is a pretty good coach.
It's now trying to pick who is better or more deserving of the college football playoff.
Right. I mean, come on, man. You're like trying to conflate those arguments.
Yeah. All right, let's do a little betcha here while we're just all fired up at Splits in Orange Park. A little betcha.
Bet you didn't know. Brought to you by Travis Cummings and the Bailey Group.
Travis, I talked to him last night. He's heading up to the SEC Championship game with young son Beckham. He's all fired up for that. Looking forward to a great day with the youngster. And you can get in touch with Travis and have a great day when it comes to all of your employees making sure that their benefits are the best that they can possibly be. Open enrollment period time, very important. So if you're a medium or large business, make sure you get in touch with Travis Cummings and the Bailey Group, and he will absolutely take it from there. The number is 461-1800. Make sure you ask for Travis Cummings. Now, I feel like I've kind of roughed y'all up here recently, so I'm going to try and maybe give you a layup here since we're talking SEC championship game. No team has won the SEC championship game without scoring 28 points or more since when?
No team has won the SEC championship without scoring 28 points or more?
Yeah, so you could turn it around and who was the last team to score less than 28 and win the SEC championship game?
Florida 2000.
You got a good chance to see either Florida or Alabama.
The Tebow game 2008.
Yeah,
they were. What was it? 23 to.
That was very. I think it was low scoring. Yeah,
I think it was 23-17 is what it was.
He hit Riley Cooper
for
that touchdown.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's either Florida or Alabama. It's one of the two.
Okay,
I'll go with Florida.
All right, you got.
Wait, what did Alabama? What did Alabama score?
Yeah. When Gary Danielson compared him to Bronco Nagurski.
JJ, you got one?
I'll say. LSU, maybe, mid-2000s.
Big Sirs?
I'm going to say Auburn.
Okay. All right. All right, so let's see here. Auburn, when they won, they scored 56 points.
Well,
when Florida won.
Wrong.
Yeah, when Florida won in 2008, they scored 31 points. In fact, if you go from 2008
If you go from
Florida in 2008 till now, the winners have scored 31, 32, 56, 42, 32, 59, 42, 29 were the Crimson Tide over the Gators in 2015. 54 for Alabama the next year, 28 for Georgia, 35 for Alabama, 37 for LSU, and 52 for the Tide. You go all the way back to 2007, and you said mid-2000s, JJ, so why the hell not? You got it, my man, LSU.
Yeah, sir!
There you go.
What was the score of that game?
LSU. Hang on. I just had it right there in front of me. 21-14.
Over Georgia, right?
Over Tennessee.
Tennessee.
That smells like Matt Mock to me.
Yeah.
That was that they had lost the last game of the regular season to Arkansas. They had two losses.
Two losses.
Lost the last game of the regular season, won the SEC championship, got in the championship game, and won it.
And that's why a lot of people have talked about this year being crazy enough to where you might have a two loss.
Right.
Until Georgia just kept boot stomping everybody, and they're not going to have.
I watched that LSU Arkansas game in 2007 at the Knights Inn Motel in Gainesville because that was the night before Florida State. And let's just say it was a Friday. Let's say that was a festive evening getting ready for the Noles and the Gators the next day. Darren McFadden went nuts in that game, too.
Yeah. McFadden, you had McFadden and Felix Jones at the same time, right?
And you had Peyton Hillis
and
on
Peyton
that
Hillis,
team.
Yeah. That big
Hack, are you texting me on the text line? On the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures because the 3-3 forces tell Matt Hayes I'll bet any amount of money he wants to bet that Cincinnati gets in if Alabama loses and Cincinnati wins.
I am not texting.
Is that not like a hacker statement right there?
I'll bet. No, that's not a hacker because he says, I'll bet any amount of money.
Hey, wait a minute. I paid up last week.
Any amount of money.
Oh, I paid up last week.
What I'm talking about. All right, now, we are hanging out at Splits in Orange Park. Real easy to find us. We're on Youngerman. We're here with Tulane Lager. The Tulane Lager ladies will be here later tonight, so that may be an even better time for you to drop by. But if you're a bowler, you're going to love Splits, and if you're into arcades, you got the kids, you got laser tag, you got all sorts of things, cool bar to hang out in. They throw the big screens up, the projectors and all their big screens on Saturdays with college football, and they turn up the sound so you guys can enjoy it. So make sure you drop on by, order your cold Tulane Lager, and watch some college ball here at Splits on a Saturday. We will say hello to Brett Romberg and find out what is up down in South Florida coming up next.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
Splits in Orange Park. I can hear this music a little bit later on tonight. Mm-hmm. They will crank it up just like JJ did. Splits in Orange Park, bowling alley, arcade, laser tag, you name it.
Tulane Lager.
They got some Tulane Lager on tap. And you can drop on by and enjoy a cold one. They'll have the Tulane Lager ladies out here tonight. And you've got a chance to win an autographed Luke Bryan guitar, courtesy of Tulane Lager. They have plenty of other goodies to give away as well. So hopefully you'll hang out with them as a lot of people are coming in saying hello at Splits in Orange Park. Now let's say hello to our man, Brett Romberg, another Hall of Famer down from the U, and we just need intel is really what we need. What in the H is going on down in South Florida? Welcome in, Brett. How are you, man?
Good, man. It sounds like I need to get on the highway real quick and jump on up so I can hear a little slow ride tonight up in Orange Park up there. Man.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah, I think you would love it. You would love it, man. This would be an easy place to hang out, that's for sure. All right, now, a couple weeks ago we're talking Miami, FSU, and you're saying, you know, Manny's not hanging on. He's not going to make it. And then we see this report yesterday, Brett, where they're basically saying – that there's too many cooks in the kitchen once again. Nobody can make a decision on the AD. What's going on?
That's 100% correct. With the cooks in the kitchen thing, apparently the interview process is going stagnant at the best. From a couple of the candidates that have been interviewed, apparently it's a little bit of a poop show, to be honest with you, what's going on in the interview process. So, really reluctant, whether they go in hoping to get the job as the athletic director at the University of Miami. I think a couple of them have kind of like walked out of the meetings being like, wow, dude, is this the kind of leadership that's there right now currently that I got to go ahead and answer to? So not only is the interview process going poorly, but clearly we see what's going on with the head coaching decision, and I think that's going to ultimately dictate one or the other. Is it going to be the chicken or the egg first? That's the big situation down there.
Well, Brad, we're in a situation, we're in a conundrum because right now, I mean, signing day, I mean, is December the 20th, I believe, and Manny and his staff is out recruiting right now with every indication that they're going to be keeping the job. So, I mean, if we're going to get a new coach in place, shouldn't it happen a lot sooner than later?
You would think so. You know, you would think that this might have happened last year, to be perfectly honest with you. And if you want to get some validation, you can go ahead and check the record books of basically all of the worst records held by the University of Miami, whether that's most yards given up in passing, most yards giving up in rushing, whether it's most missed tackles. That's all underneath the tutelage and the watch of, you know, Manny Diaz and his stellar defense. You ask a lot of the former players, former guys that are witnessing and watching this thing firsthand, they could tell you to a man that it's pretty poor. It's definitely a situation that I think the powers that be, whether that's the board of trustees, the guys that are throwing the big money, the guys that are supposed to be making the decision about bringing coaches in, I don't think they understand the analytics really of football. And I think they need somebody in there to make them very aware, kind of shine light on some of the situations that are going on with the football program that otherwise might be, you know, to the blind eye for the most part for a normal businessman who just wants to write a check and basically try to make a decision via a check.
Now, Brett, I mean, that information that you just gave about Manny Diaz as the defensive coordinator, I was not aware of that. I mean, this kind of information, is that being withheld with the board or this kind of information? Do they know what Manny has done at the University of Miami since he's been there, and why would you keep him after that?
Well, that's the whole thing, Leon. It's like, it's one of those things where, you know, a football guy like us, and especially as a defensive player, that's the first statistic, you know, whether I did color analyst work or not, the first statistic I'm looking at as an offensive coordinator, an opposing offensive coordinator, is, okay, what are we looking at? Third down situations, long, what are we looking at? Conversion rates, what are we looking at? What is this guy's tendencies? And it didn't take much for Butch Davis and his crew at FIU to basically have Manny's playbook directly in front of them to dictate how they were going to call their football game, because apparently it was so transparent on what he's about to do and what he's doing that it almost became robotic, and it was almost an easy win for FIU, which on the graveyard of the Orange Bowl, which is, you know, Marlins Park right now, that's almost like one of the most embarrassing situations. And we get constantly reminded of it down here, of the day that, you know, Florida International University Panthers came in and whooped Miami's ass on their old stomping ground. So, and by half of the former players and coaching staff that was currently at the University of Miami.
Former Miami Hurricane center, former Jacksonville Jaguar center, Brett Romberg here with us on XL Primetime. Brett, here's my question. We had you on Florida State Week, and we thought, or I'm sorry, Florida State Miami Week, and at that point we thought it was a foregone conclusion that Manny Diaz was going to lose his job. Look, Virginia Tech had a Justin Fuente problem. They moved on. Florida had a Dan Mullen problem. They moved on. Southern Cal, a Clay Helton problem. They moved on, et cetera, et cetera. We're 6 days into the offseason, and Manny Diaz is still there. It comes as a shock to a lot of people. Why, in your opinion, A, has something not happened yet, and B, what is the argument down there for keeping Manny around?
Well, I think Kirk Herbstreit basically said it all on national television, which luckily for us kind of got the president of our university off his butt and witnessing what's going on with the athletic programs, that it garnered that email that went out, you know, university-wide, basically saying that he's like all in with the athletics of this university, and the heartbeat of the university is athletics. But if you look at it from our standpoint, it's clearly not. It's clearly more of an academic institution that people are paying upwards of $75,000 to $80,000 to attend. So as long as that outside money, and the majority of that outside money is coming in from out-of-state and international students, which they don't get any breaks, they don't get any grants, they don't get any scholarship or nothing like that. So it's one of those things where as long as they keep flipping a bill by all of the out-of-state people that want to attend to make this an academic institution, therefore the football program is content with the 7-5 mediocre bowl game, half-ass football that we've been witnessing for the most part of two decades at this point in time. So it's hard to always go back and compare to what it was, what it once was. And me and Vilma were sitting chopping it up, talking about it. And if you really dissect the University of Miami right now, we're about as, you know, consistent of a program as Iowa. Like, we've had a year of upside, or maybe 2 years of, you know what I mean, like a fart in the wind just vanishing of good football. But for the most part, if you look at what we're done, we're an average football program, which is almost embarrassing to say and hard to say, but you got to call a spade at this point. We are an average football program that goes into every weekend wondering if we were going to be winning this football game, regardless of who we're playing, regardless.
Brett, could it be as simple as we're all kind of overblown it a little bit and they're just waiting for Mario to finish with the Pac-12 championship game, then it'll happen quickly?
It's a good possibility. It's a good possibility. But, again, I think, you know, the fact that Manny Diaz has cost the university, you know, a good lump sum of money, that's a big issue. And I'm not saying we can't afford a guy like Mario Cristobal now, because now we really can. Like, now we have money for the first time in a long time. And if you analyze our assistant, which was one of the, you know, one of the big question marks on the amount of money we were able to pay assistant coaches, we're right up there nationally now, kind of even. The only thing that's different is obviously the cost of living down here. But in terms of, like, salaries and compensation, we're right there with the assistant coaches as well. So we're there. I think we have money now that we're able to spend. We also have a couple more boosters that have jumped on the program, some billionaires here locally that are looking to go ahead and contribute to make that difference. But again, you're dealing with, we just fired the athletic director who was standing on chairs for a guy like Manny Diaz and almost had to hit the panic button when Mark Richt left. And we had to hurry up and try to hire somebody that could possibly continue what Mark Richt had going on. And I think that panic button is ultimately the demise of the former athletic director, Blake James, and the way that he was kind of, I wouldn't say running the program softly, but, you know, allowing others to ultimately, you could say he was a good delegate. You know, he allowed others to run their ship a little bit. So he needed, I said that with a P, by the way. He needed to run it a little bit tighter, a little bit more iron-fisted, which I think a guy like Mario Cristobal wants to run his program like a Nick Saban. So I think if you let Mario do whatever he wants to do, he's not going to want to go run and ask an athletic director that we need some money for this, and the athletic director is going to give him a hard time about it or complain about needing to go raise the funds. It needs to be, this is what I need, this is what I want, because he's getting it right now up in Eugene, Oregon, and I don't need ifs, ands, or buts, just provide. You want the program to succeed? Provide. Otherwise, find an AD that's a businessman, that has a little bit more business sense, savvy, and is able to go out in the community and develop and basically rebrand what is the University of Miami's brand. One of the most recognizable brands in the country is the U, but unfortunately, I think due to culture and a few things that have been happening lately, we need to kind of rebrand the business side as well.
Yahtzee, man, you are definitely hitting it, and I know that Miami Hurricane fans are saying, why the heck can't we get back to what Brett Romberg's talking about, Big Search is talking about. We'll talk with a Hall of Famer down there, a former Jaguar, and Brett Romberg, at Romberg66. You can catch him on Twitter and, of course, catch him on sports radio down in South Florida. So, Brett, like you said, they're going to bring billionaires to the table that can make contributions. And when they let go of their AD, it just screamed to me they were letting go of Manny. So what do you think the timeline is for them to make that decision on the AD, and then how swiftly will they move for, say, a Mario?
My guess is by the time bowl week kind of get going here, right around the holidays is my guess, you'll have a great idea of what's going to be going on both sides, whether it's an athletic director and then shortly thereafter a coach or vice versa. I really do think so. There's a lot of things. Like my dream team, if you're asking to build my dream team right now, it would be Mario Cristobal, obviously running the football. It would be bringing Ken Dorsey down from the Buffalo Bills, who has a laundry list of guys that he's developed that have been outstanding, whether it's developing Cam Newton in his early days with the Panthers, whether it's developing this kid Alex Morgan out of FIU, who he turned into a 30-touchdown, 2-interception type of guy, from a 50-50 interception touchdown ratio guy, or you got him dealing with the Buffalo Bills right now and basically running game up there with the Bills and their amazing quarterback. So you get Ken Dorsey working with a kid like Tyler Van Dyke, ACC player, rookie of the year guy, for 2 or 3 years, I think that will be cement. That would be just amazing, along with Mario Cristobal. And then in the AD side of things, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't care. If you get those two down here, you could put Jorge Mas as our athletic director. Hell, you could bring Mark Richt out of a chair on ESPN to be our athletic director. I really don't care. At that point in time, I think our football program is on the right track, and then we need to find a way to start, and unfortunately, and which is one of the worst possible motivating factors for me as a young football player, is find a way to get these kids NIL deals. Kids are just dying to go somewhere to make $25,000, $50,000 a year at university. And we need to start, as former players, possibly contributing into this pot to try to help these young men out and entice them to come to the University of Miami. Because right now, it ain't the football that's going to make them come.
Yeah, that's resonating with me, Brett, that Miami is an average program. That's hurting my heart right now.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, man, It's one of those things where you say it and you're just like, God, that really just came out of my mouth.
It don't even feel right coming out of my mouth.
It hurt. It hurts, man.
True. It does hurt, bro.
Hey, Brett, as we begin to wrap up, there's a couple of guys on our show, including Leon over here, that would love a Lane Kiffin to Coral Gables scenario. Are you saying that it's either going to be Mario Cristobal or Manny, or is Lane in play at all?
I don't think Lane's in play at all, to be honest with you. If you want a drinking buddy and a guy that we can hang out and go to South Beach with, yes. That Lane is our guy. But I'm telling you, if you get him down here in South Florida, whoo! I know he was at FAU, but West Palm Beach is a much whiter, much less Latin, less sexy. You're dealing with, like, old white money up there. Down here, this is trouble in bottles. Like,
oh, yeah, he's
getting
in trouble
there.
No
pun intended.
Oh, yeah.
No pun intended, but yeah, you better, and cell phone area too. Ooh, you catch him on only in day, probably twice a week. We're going to be on ESPN for not the da-na-na plays. It's going to be like, hey, this is what happened with Lane Kiffin at the University of Miami again. We'll be on the news now. We'll be on the news.
The not top 10, exactly. That's what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally appreciate the intel and you jumping in, because whenever you see what has been described as a blank show and a cluster blank and all that, we wanted to go to the guy who's on top of it. That's for sure. Hey, man, enjoy the weekend, and we'll see how quickly it moves down there.
Oh, yeah, let's get happy hour going here. What is it? Got to be near that time. Isn't it on a Friday, too? Yeah. And you guys are
It's getting close, bro. It's getting
sunny?
Close.
Is it sunny over
yeah,
there,
we're
too?
Yeah, it's beautiful sunshine, Ooh. And we're staring at a bar right now, Brett.
Oh, God, that's motorcycle weather now. Oh, man.
Appreciate you, bro.
You got it. Nice talking to you.
All right.
That's awesome.
Interesting to that. I mean, that's one guy's opinion, but he's pretty well connected down there.
Yeah.
Says there's no chance Lane Kiffin's going to Miami.
Manny's going to get fired Sunday.
That's
my guess.
It's that big – You really?
Sunday, yep. I think when Mario's done – There's no other reason, for them to be waiting right now.
It's that big swing at Mario.
It's not only that. They're waiting because they're trying to hire someone who's right now has a game.
Yeah.
So it's got to be Mario. Who else could it be at this point?
So why do you have Manny there for the last week? Why didn't you just fire him?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Just to hold it together, because they don't have an AD right now.
Yeah.
So and that was their first step. And basically what you do is you let the AD come in, if there's somebody at the top that has control, come in and say – All right, upon further review, we're going to have to move on.
I mean,
we're moving in a different direction.
They've got an interim AD right now, but it's
right.
I think it's
true.
I think it's to your point. I think it's you got to have some kind of continuity, which is probably where they're at right now. And I mean, the reality is they're waiting on someone.
Well, I mean, it was interesting what Brett said about the AD. He said that if you bring in a Mario Cristobal, who's from the Saban tree, he's not going to want to have to go in there. Maybe the AD may be tied with Mario in some capacity. Because
right.
if Mario wants to run things, he say, I need money for this, and
right.
that. He don't want to have to struggle with the AD and getting the money that he needs to do the program. So maybe, you know, they're being very particular on
True.
The AD. And
maybe they just want to announce them both together.
There you go.
We're going to go. Our AD is Gino Toretta. Our head coach is Mario Cristobal.
Right.
Boom, done.
2015 Alabama coaching staff. I might miss a couple of guys. I saw this yesterday. Nick was the head coach, obviously. Your DC was Kirby Smart. Your offensive coordinator was Lane Kiffin. Mario Cristobal was on that staff.
Line
Billy
coach.
Napier mm-hmm. was on that staff. Jim McElwain mm-hmm. was just an incredible staff.
Mel Tucker might have been on that staff.
Mel
too.
Tucker, yeah. I think, might have been on that staff. Yeah. It's a crazy good staff.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right, we're hanging out at Splits at Orange Park. Pretty good scene going on here. Tulane Lager. They will be serving them up later. The Tulane Lager ladies will be here. As a matter of fact, JJ, if we play a Luke Bryan song, we need all of our listeners to be listening. You hear a Luke Bryan song during a commercial break, whenever JJ puts it in there, you've got a chance to get qualified for a autographed guitar by Luke Bryan from Tulane Lager.
One, two, three. Time now for Cover Three. Three big college games. Three big NFL games. Who on XL Primetime can beat the spread?
We have a new leader in the clubhouse, folks. And he is a national college football writer. His name is Matthew Hayes.
He's nice. Ascended to the top.
Nice. Yes, he has. So now he has a one-game lead after Joe Cowart with a 1-5 week 13.
Absolutely hit the crapper last week. There is no doubt about it. If there was ever a time to go Oppo Joe, that was
Did I go 3-3 again, JJ?
No, you just went 2-4, but that was one game better than Joe. So Joe leading, or Matt at 36-42 against the spread. Joe one game back. Leon three games back, and Hack at 32-46, and JJ 30-48 against the spread.
In the rear.
Yes, in the poorhouse.
JJ, right. Where did I go last week?
You went 3-3. You and Hack led the way last week.
Hey, JJ, so how many games am I behind Matt? Four?
Only four.
Wow, that's amazing, because I have been horrible.
Yeah.
All right, good.
All right.
Well,
what are you trying to say, Hack?
A little bit of a nosedive.
We've all been bad.
Yeah, we all have been bad. All right, let's start with the NFL, because we'll save the best for last with college. All right, so we have, I feel like we've been doing a lot of Steelers games lately. We have the Ravens at the Steelers. The Ravens on the road are 4.5-point favorites. Matt.
Oh, boy. Steelers need this game.
By the way, I believe the Ravens are number one in the AFC, and if that's true, it's the worst number one seed in the history of football.
yeah, I agree.
I'm going to take the Steelers in the points. I think the Ravens are going to win, but I think Steelers are going to cover. Good teams win, JJ. Great teams cover.
That's a fact. Joe?
Well, I think to myself, how is a team, did Lamar throw four picks the other night?
In a win.
He threw four picks in a win. I want to say he might be the first ever to do that. So I do agree with your quick analysis, JJ. Instant analysis from JJville that they're the worst number one. But I still am going to lay the points. The Pittsburgh Steelers are dead, folks. Dead.
Yeah, I mean, Lamar Jackson, in November you should be playing your best football. He threw four picks that last game. In Pittsburgh, they're going to take advantage of that. I'm going to take the Steelers to win this game.
Mm. All right, I need some clarification. Are we doing six picks for NFL starting next week?
Yeah,
I
got to
figure out.
Just like whenever we mix, like we might mix a college game.
I just got to figure out. So we are going to do the bowl games and through the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because I gotta start offsetting Matt a little bit. I just gotta know how much time I have. Because we're gonna do so many picks.
Your life literally revolves around beating me.
Yeah. It does.
It's unreal.
I wake up and I think, how can I best Matt?
Not just
today?
Picks, everything in life. Boy.
Yes,
that's all he's got. But
it is all I have. Shallow existence.
We're gonna keep picking all the way through the Super Bowl.
All right, because I'm thinking about taking Pittsburgh too. I am going to take Pittsburgh, too. This is a circle the wagons game.
I agree.
For the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's now or never, and I'll take Pittsburgh.
I agree with Joe on this. I'm taking the Ravens. Next up, this one's really interesting. A struggling Chargers go on the road against the Bengals, coming off a huge win last week. The Bengals at home are 3-point favorites. Matt.
Yeah, the Chargers are struggling. And I love the way Burrow's playing. You want to talk about a guy, we talk about how Trevor Lawrence makes people better. He makes people better in that offense. I'll lay those points. I'll take the Bengals.
So, how many points, JJ?
Three.
No, you were looking for the hook. I knew you were.
All right, so Bengals favored at home by a field goal over those Los Angeles Chargers that are right now pretty bad against the run, that's for sure. So, Joey Mixon and company, I'm going to go ahead and lay the points.
You know, Joe Burrow has brought swag to Cincinnati. Mm. I never thought I would put the two words together, Cincinnati and swag. When they asked him the question about Pittsburgh, sweeping Pittsburgh, he said, yeah, we beat them. Our aspirations are way beyond beating Pittsburgh. I love that about that kid. I got Cincinnati. They're one of my favorite teams now.
The Bengals seem to play down to their competition. See Thursday night against Jacksonville. They also seem to play up to their competition because the Chargers are a pretty good team. I expect the Bengals to play fairly well, so I'll take Cincinnati.
All right, clean sweep. We all have the Bengals. All right, last but not least, this is the best Monday night game of the season so far, I believe. The Pats, led by Jacksonville's own Mac Jones, on the road in Buffalo. The Bills are 2.5-point favorites.
Yeah, it's got to end at some point. It's got to end at some point for the Patriots. Bills at home, 2.5, is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Yeah, I'll take the Bills. I'll lay the points.
Lay the points, 2.5. And, you know, the thing I look at is Mac Jones is on a roll, and they have won, what, a half dozen straight, something like that? They're moving at a pretty good clip, and Buffalo kind of, like, gets in their own way too often. I'm gonna take the points.
Well, you don't easily beat Belichick in December. He's making that play. The Patriots look like the best team in the AFC right now.
Mm.
And on the road to Buffalo?
Go ahead, man. Y'all keep picking the Patriots. I'll just keep getting, extend them the lead.
I'm picking the Patriots.
All right.
See, the thing about Buffalo, though, you would normally say, well, the Bills at home, it's a no-brainer.
He's an obnoxious leader out in front. Yeah,
he is. The first time all year I have to be obnoxious. Are you kidding me?
You would normally say the Bills at home is a no-brainer. They've gotten crushed in two games at home this year. Their last home game, they lost 41-15 to Indianapolis. They do not play well at home. It is a Monday night game, though. It is for first place in the division. I like what Leon said about Belichick in December, but I agree that at some point you're not going to win them all. I'll go with Buffalo to win.
I like the Bills as well, but I don't feel very confident about it. All right. This weekend's really about college football. Let's start with the Big Ten. No, let's start with the Big 12. Baylor versus Oklahoma State. All these are at neutral sites. Oklahoma State is a 5.5-point favorite.
I'm taking those points. Baylor's winning outright. I'm taking those points. Baylor's a better team. They're a better team than Oklahoma State. They blew the first time, the first game they played. They'll beat them.
I do like the idea of carnage, finding out where and when it might happen. I have Oklahoma State in the playoff if they win, but I like those 5.5 points.
Yeah, I'm taking Baylor.
Nothing quite says Big 12 football like the Baylor Bears going up against Oklahoma State for the conference championship. I mean, that's really what it's all about tomorrow. Are you enjoying those fries, by the way? I'm just curious.
They're really good.
They're very good, right? I just hear
what's wrong with Baylor football?
I was about to say, I think this game is going to be fun tomorrow.
Like, what's wrong with really Baylor good football, man?
The Bears, look.
They got 10 wins. Your team has 6.
It says about Florida.
Yeah, hell.
They beat your team by 4 touchdowns.
Bedlam last Saturday night was great theater.
Absolutely.
And I'm telling you, Spencer Sanders is a really fun football player to watch, and I love what Aranda's done. Aranda's come in, kind of got the defense going in the right direction, and they are creative and playmakers on the offensive side. So I like it.
Yeah, Bohannon's a good player,
Big
man.
12 football.
Fun to watch him play.
Yeah, I do like Bohannon. I interviewed him for Gridiron when he was in the recruiting process. I know all about Bohannon. Oklahoma State beat him once. It's hard to beat a team twice. Yeah, I'll take Baylor. I'll take Baylor to win the game and raise that Big 12 championship trophy.
We are all sticking to basically the same picks. This is getting boring. I thought I was going to be
like
the only
this
one taking Baylor. All right. Big Ten, I would argue this game sucks. Michigan versus Iowa. Michigan at a neutral site is an 11-point favorite.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. This all hinges on Petras. If he doesn't turn the ball over, I think Iowa can cover. I really do. Because Michigan's going to have a letdown, man. They are. They absolutely, I don't know how you can't have a letdown after that game. That game, they were so far up, so ready for that game against Ohio State. They were so juiced. Hadn't won in so long. They win the game. They win it big. Then they go into the week. No one's talking about that game. Everybody's talking about the coaching carousel. I think Iowa covers. I'm taking the points in Iowa. Yeah.
11, look, if I lay the points, I get crushed. If I take the points, I get crushed. And I've gone back and forth on this one, honestly. Because
it's a lot of points in the championship
Big Ten,
game,
just,
man.
Yeah, I just gotten burned. I agree with every bit of logic you just laid out there. What an emotional game! I'm gonna lay the points.
Mm.
I just went off.
Iowa can win a championship, man.
Yeah,
that's
I'm going with Michigan.
Michigan.
You know why I'm gonna go with Michigan? Because everybody in the country thinks they're gonna have a letdown. That's like the low hanging fruit. You beat Ohio State. You're going to have a letdown, man.
Do
they're going to have a
analysis
letdown.
About your low-hanging
No, I'm not talking about Matt Hayes in general. I'm talking about everybody that says that. I've heard 20 different people
it's 100%
on the network say it. It's low-hanging fruit. You know why they're not going to have a letdown? Because if they win, they're in the college football playoff for the first time ever. That's a gigantic deal for Harbaugh and for Michigan. It's an 11-point line, JJ?
Yes.
How about you
still have a letdown and win 24-20.
Yeah.
Well, you can have a letdown and win. I mean, Iowa's a 13th ranked team in the country. This is about winning the game. I'm going to take Iowa because I think 11 points is massive, but I'm certainly going to take Michigan to win the game.
I'm going to take Michigan. I think Iowa's offense. I watched them in that one game earlier this season when game day was there, and it was bad.
I know it's bad.
All right.
So you're taking Iowa in the points.
Michigan wins, but not by 11,
means. So you're taking Iowa in the points?
Sure.
How have you not figured this out yet?
Yes.
All right.
And last but not least, I'm super pumped for this. Bama, Georgia.
Me too.
Georgia, a 6.5-point favorite as of right now. Matt, who you got?
Golly. I could just see this thing a tie game and Georgia goes down and wins it last minute.
You think Stetson Bennett's going to leave a game-winning drive?
No, it could be JT Daniels, bro. Okay. It could easily be JT Daniels.
I know where JJ's going.
Yeah, I'm thinking Bama to win. Stetson Bennett sucks. I'm tired of it.
I know, man. God, it's so hard to pick against Georgia right now.
Yeah, it is.
I'll take Georgia. I'll take Georgia and lay the points.
I will do the same.
I'm taking Roll Tide.
I thought Alabama was going to win all week. I just think Alabama's going to win the game. I think Georgia gets in, and I think you have two SEC teams in. The committee's doing backflips. I will take Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide.
I agree. I think we're going to have the same conversation that we do about Kirby every year. The guy doesn't know how to handle the quarterback, and that's the only wrong thing he does wrong. And yeah, I think at the end of the game, it could be JT Daniels.
Could be, yeah. I will tell you this. If Alabama, we've been talking about who is Alabama beating. If they beat Georgia, they'll be the one seed. Yeah. They'll jump Michigan.
They could jump to one. Whoa, holy cow. I did hear from a Bama man, and he said Tua came off the bench to beat Georgia. Hurts comes off the bench to beat Georgia. Does Daniels come off the bench to beat Bama?
He's even thinking about that.
The worst-case scenario.
I like that a lot, actually.
Which is what J.J. mentioned. Real quick, I got to get Dr. Odd's pick. He was. This is a little bit of a kissing your cousin week this past week, 2-2. But he likes Georgia, -6.5 versus Bama. And Dr. Odd says -4.5 for Cal versus USC. He likes the look of that one as well. All right, Big Sirs, before you get out, you might even sample a two-lane lager before you're done.
Yeah, right? I will. Absolutely. For sure.
Jaguars game.
Rams. I don't think it's going to be pretty.
No,
I don't think.
13.5 spread.
Jags are going to kill them, huh?
Rams will cover. I think the Rams, the offense, I haven't seen anything from the Jaguars offense in the last couple of weeks. Putting too much pressure on the defense. I think the Rams 24, Jaguars 7.
Yeah, if they hold the Rams to 24, what a victory that would be for the Jaguars.
Like one, right?
Yeah, to feel like one. You and I, Leon, excited if they lose by 17. We'll be able to talk about it from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock on Sunday night.
For sure.
On the fifth quarter, a late night edition of the fifth quarter. So that'll be a lot of fun and excitement.
Absolutely.
Well, you look forward to that. And if they can come out with something a little bit better than that, it'll be a more lively program than trying to piece together Band-Aid a 24-7 loss. All right, Big Sirs, enjoy the rest of the weekend.
All right, fellas.
You are out. We are here at Tulane Lager hanging out. Splits in Orange Park right here on Youngerman's Circle.
Mindset's been great. The energy's been great. Our guys have really been focused. I think it's very important as a coach that you curb the enthusiasm. You have it under control. This is one of those weeks you got to be careful. You don't leave the battle out on the practice field.
This is XL Primetime, brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010 XL.
That's Kirby Smart, coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, channeling his best Nick Saban.
Did he say curb your enthusiasm?
Yeah, he just said curb your enthusiasm.
Channeling his
definitely going
Larry David.
Yeah,
right?
A little Larry David.
Yeah,
he was channeling Larry early, but then channeling Nick late when he basically said, don't have that all happen on the practice field.
Right.
And I totally get it because he wants his guys to play at that fever pitch, which is what Nick has been a master at for so long. And Kirby's done a very good job. This team hasn't gotten bored with the assignment. Now, keep in mind, this is the first time that they have that carrot in front of them, this group, to win a natty, whereas Nick's able to do it year after year after year. But they've got everything they need to go out there and win. Tomorrow afternoon, you'll be able to hear it right here on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Georgia, a 6.5-point favorite.
Don't you get the feeling that, or at least maybe you guys don't because you think you're picking Georgia, I get the feeling this is part one of a sequel. We're going to see this again in a month for the national championship.
Look, the way the season's gone, I can't look anybody in the eye and say, hey, you don't know what you're talking about because so many crazy things have happened. I'm just of the opinion that Alabama is running out of good fortune. They have made all of their good fortune themselves.
They're running out of times with the running.
Yeah, and Bryce Young, like you said, is as special as he's been. Robinson is hurt. They do have good playmakers on the edge, but they don't have a good running game, and they also are a little suspect up front. And so they're just not the same offense productivity-wise where they've been able to hold the football, run the clock the way that they want to, whereas Kirby and them have been able to do that. They've got guys that can punch holes through defensive fronts.
I go back to that 97-yard drive. And, again, Auburn is not Georgia. I'm not sitting here saying they are.
Right.
But Auburn had a heck of a game plan last week. Jameson Williams wasn't out there. Brian Robinson was hurt. I don't even know if he played in the last drive.
No, he didn't.
And they went 97 yards despite all that for the game-tying touchdown and then did what they needed to do in overtime to win at Jordan-Hare Stadium that was going worse than bonkers. So the fact that they get Williams back tomorrow, if Robinson gives them anything, it'll be more than what they got on that 97-yard drive.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying you guys, but the consensus, at least watching SEC Network.
It's funny you said that because maybe on the SEC Network.
Because it's Georgia. And I'm sitting there thinking, have people forgotten what Kirby's record is against Nick Saban?
Because
he doesn't beat Nick Saban.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening this morning, and it seemed like it was split. And again, this is not SEC Network, but people giving the ultimate respect to the guy who deserves the ultimate respect, and that's Nick, saying, don't ever count this guy out. Don't count that team out. And so I've definitely heard that side of it. But that's when I just look at this, and I know that Kirby can get tight, Matt. He can get tight in these big ball games. We've seen it happen. But his quarterback to this point has not let him down. It's not cost him anything. He hasn't had to second guess any decision he's made. He does have that defense playing they are savages on that side of the ball, and they like to eat on every play. And so I think they're probably really loving the idea that they may be able to take that team off the top of the mountain.
Yeah, I think this has to be pointed out, honestly. You know, with 2 minutes to go in the first half against Florida, that's a 3-0 game, and he's thrown two picks already.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not playing well. He absolutely was not playing well, and that was a tight game. And if you've got a team on the other side that can stress them a little bit offensively, which Florida couldn't in that game.
Right.
But if you have a team that can stress them a little bit and can do damage initially on defense, then you put them in a position where they're chasing. And I know we say this all the time, but if Florida could have done anything in that game and not screwed it up in the last 2 minutes of the first half,
right,
and even tied it at 3-3 or something,
right,
then you're in the second half with them.
Yeah.
Then it starts to seep in a little bit.
Sure.
All right, we haven't been here before. What are we doing now? So I'm not disregarding Alabama. Honestly, I think it's going to be something like a tie game or a close game, 1 or 2 point game, and Georgia's going to go down and win at the end with a touchdown and cover.
Really? Okay, honestly, it really is the ultimate wrinkle in this particular game is that Georgia's not been stressed to any level, and there is definitely something to that. If it happens, let's see how they react to it.
And
that's
look,
fair.
I'm obviously going to pay 90-95% of my attention tomorrow afternoon on Georgia and Alabama. I will tell you this, though. Kicking off 30 minutes prior is Billy Napier, Louisiana, App State, and I'm curious how many Gator fans, Gator alums here in the Jacksonville area will flip it over to ESPN at 3:30, if nothing more than a quick look-see at what Billy Napier is doing with Louisiana in his final game. By the way, he is scheduled roughly for a 4:30 introductory press conference Sunday afternoon in Gainesville, so he's literally going to coach a Sun Belt championship game and then fly to Gainesville, you would assume, tomorrow night.
Well,
to get ready for that press conference. But I think Gator fans probably want to watch a little bit of Billy Napier tomorrow.
I DVR'd the last one. I'm DVRing this one just to see the offense and see what it looks like, see what the defense looks like as well. I'm talking to a couple of people. Napier has Furman ties. Talked to a buddy whose son is played at Furman, and they went back there on a couple of visits.
He's from South Carolina.
Yeah. And
one of Napier's starting offensive linemen on that Furman team lives here in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
He called the fifth quarter.
Cool.
I forget his name. His name escapes me. I'll find it in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's one of the starters along the O-line
that
Billy was the quarterback for.
And so they kind of not revere. That may not be. That may be a little over the top. But anyway, very well respected, very well liked. Wins the room. Has that certain country charisma. Matter of fact, speaking of country charisma, I think Billy Napier's is real, okay? Because he was born in the South. As opposed to Brian Kelly.
How embarrassing.
JJ, if you could give us a little sample, this is Brian Kelly, the newly hired coach of the LSU Tigers. Go Tigers. And he's addressing the basketball audience last night, and dang if he didn't go with a little Southern drawl.
Well, this is a great way to get started. And I haven't even won all my games yet. It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
And I'm glad you didn't have that Ralph or Salafusi. We never got past number one.
I'll tell you the funniest thing.
Oh, it's the best.
Jeff Darlington of ESPN put this together. Brian Kelly's post his comments to Notre Dame when he was leaving the players.
Yeah.
He said the word family. And Jeff Darlington took that snippet of Brian Kelly saying family in South Bend to saying family last night, and it was two different people. It was night and day. I don't know who told him or if it was his own idea that, hey, let's go out there with a Southern draw now that you're Louisiana State University's head coach. What a clown show that turned into last night.
Well, it ain't a good look, that's for sure. And if you are going to be accused of being fake, don't really be fake right out of the jump, which is basically what he did. And, look, you can come in there and just do your own thing, and they will respect you. You don't need any Southern charm if you can coach football. See Urban Meyer, okay? Urban didn't have any Southern charm. But you go in there and you start doing some of that stuff. I said it yesterday, and this is a key, is coaches on the high school level, in when they're handing recruits over, those players look to that high school coach as much as they look to mom and dad. And if that high school coach doesn't believe he's believable, then that will be a negative. That's for sure.
So Hacker said that Billy Napier is going to hop on the plane after the championship game and go to Gainesville and get ready for that press conference. My guess would be they're going to fly his family somehow, whether it's, you know, whatever, probably private plane. My guess would be he's going to be recruiting. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think he's going to get on a plane and start recruiting right after that game.
You heard what Coach Campo said yesterday. First off, he's getting very little sleep.
Right.
Because he's doing 3, 4, 5 different things.
Right. Well, he's doing Zoom calls right now.
But then
recruits.
Once that game's over, he's all Florida.
Yeah.
And, so, my guess is he's going to start recruiting immediately.
He's talking to recruits, and he's interviewing potential staff.
Right.
And so all that stuff has to go down.
Well, the interesting thing that he's doing, which I kind of like, and I don't know if it's going to translate to anything, he's talking to current LSU commitments and recruits in Louisiana. Because who does he know? He knows guys in Louisiana from what he's doing the last 4 years and say, hey, you want to come with me to Gainesville? And even if he gets 2 or 3 guys out of Louisiana to come with him, that would be a very big coup for Florida.
Yeah, if they're, whatever, 3 stars plus. It's not like Florida and LSU wouldn't be interested in both, especially with what he visualizes as what he wants in a football player. Oh, heck yeah. They're generally recruiting the same type of guys, depending on the stars, that's for sure.
Yeah, Alabama recruits 3-star players, too.
Yeah, as long as they know they can get the goods out of them. So, simple as that. All right, we cruise into the 2 o'clock hour. We'll look at some of these other games. I'll throw a stat at you guys. It is a bit of a saucy dog, but also it says a little bit about the season that we experienced this year, and we'll see if we get more of that coming up. It's XL Primetime.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right, so this stays with the lines of college football we've been talking about the last couple hours. It's what I talked about a couple weeks ago with you guys, too, with Florida, how Florida had to act like we're Florida. Of course people want this job. Like, there was the worry that what if you can't get the guy you want, then you're not
sure.
You're going to have to settle for someone.
Are you going to keep Mullen?
Right, okay? So they're the University of Florida. They're one of the two biggest programs in the best conference of college football, okay? It's Alabama and Florida in the SEC. And Georgia can say all they want. It's Alabama and Florida in the SEC, all right? So Ross Dellinger, who's a writer for Sports Illustrated, has a story. And in it says, when Florida's job opened, the Florida officials were alerted that both Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly were interested in the job. Florida, however, had already had their number one target, Billy Napier, and went after him.
I'll tell you this, all right? Now, I don't know about the Lincoln Riley thing. I would listen more to that. I am 100% all right with Billy Napier over Brian Kelly.
Well, yeah.
100%. I'll tell you this, too. Ryan Clark, who's on ESPN, former LSU Bengal Tiger. I think Ryan does a really good job. He was not happy with the Brian Kelly hiring because he wanted Billy Napier in Baton Rouge.
Well,
so I wonder how many LSU alum fans as well. Again, Lincoln Riley might be a separate issue.
Right.
But for me, Billy Napier versus Brian Kelly,
I'm
over the moon that it was Billy Napier.
Okay, I honestly find it funny that like Brian Kelly has credentials. Billy Napier has like 1/10 of the credentials.
Brian Kelly also has a southern fake accent that he went with last night.
I totally get that.
Ass of himself.
Yeah, I totally get that. But
nothing like being a prisoner of the moment, huh?
Yeah, it's so funny. If he's your coach, you'll figure out how to like it. If he's someone else's coach, he made an ass of himself.
No assistants are going with him. That also speaks volumes.
Well, that happened with Nick Saban.
Well, you know what? No assistants went with Nick Saban from Michigan State. And guess what? 2 years later, he won the SEC.
Are you comparing Brian Kelly to Nick Saban?
Hack, we don't
God
use that rule
almighty,
on this show.
This is just,
we're using
God.
Examples. We're using examples.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're gonna make that statement right after I say that about Brian Kelly, I would hope you're not comparing the two.
Well, first off, Hack, I don't think you can compare anyone to Nick Saban, okay?
I agree.
However, Brian Kelly's a damn good coach.
Well, I think the message in the Nick Saban comment is that Nick Saban wasn't very likable. That's the message in
that
statement.
That's kind of the idea. Because if you're saying no one liked Brian Kelly, which is what you were insinuating there. Guess what? Coaches don't like – you know who else coaches don't like? Urban Meyer. The assistants that work for him don't like him either. But they put up with him.
Hey, well, like I said, man, I'm more than happy with Billy Napier, and we'll see what happens.
I'll just tell you this. I'm rooting for Billy Napier, but anyone who says that they're happier than with Billy Napier over Brian Kelly in terms of what one has accomplished versus the other –
that's not crazy, Joe, because what if Brian Kelly, what he did 7 years ago, what does that have anything to do with what he's going to do
he's
now?
He's the all-time leading wins leader at Notre Dame.
Yeah. You can speak as loud as you want and have the smile on your face and all that. I don't care. I want what he's going to do forward, not what he's done in the last 15
years. Well, how do you judge someone then?
Everyone's being hired on what they did do. Okay, that's
right. Brian Kelly is a 60-year-old dude who's never been in the South, never recruited in the South, has no assistants coming with him. Billy Napier knows the South, coached under Saban at Alabama, took Louisiana to a ranked position where the Ragin' Cajuns were awful, has by in all accounts over the moon exceeded what was expected from him at a Southern school.
You just said took Louisiana to a ranked position. And I just told you that Brian Kelly was the all-time wins leader in Notre Dame. You said, what does that mean? Doesn't mean anything.
Passed a guy named Newt.
Hey.
Ever heard of him?
Hey, save the tape, JJ. We'll talk next year.
By the way,
we'll see where Billy Napier is.
But we both agree with you that Napier's the better fit for that job. Yeah, what I'm saying is, Brian Kelly is...
If anyone says, I will give you the choice, will you take Brian Kelly or Billy Napier on the face of a resume? I will take Brian Kelly.
Why?
Okay.
Why?
Why? He is the winningest coach at one of the biggest, most visible programs.
And the most difficult place to win, too.
Has he ever recruited down here?
Oh, my gosh. Do you have
your own set of questions? I know that doesn't fit your argument, so you try to bury it. Has he ever recruited down here?
My answer is yes, he has recruited down here.
How often?
I'm going to say 43% of the time.
43%
every single
of the
season
time.
He's come down here and recruited.
Well, he's got Florida players on his roster.
Not many.
I know.
Go look at his roster.
I know for a fact he is recruited down here.
All right, good. Good. So I know, Matt, that you like Brian Kelly, and I get that, and it's fairly obvious.
No, Hack, I think he's a good coach.
All right, well, that's it.
I mean, that's fine.
That's it more than anything else.
But for somebody, for you guys to think I'm crazy that I'm happy with Billy Napier instead of Brian Kelly.
We don't think you're crazy. We agree with you. We think Napier's a better fit.
I hope Billy Napier is much better than Brian Kelly. Okay? I hope Brian Kelly sucks. Big Vic, you listening? I hope Brian Kelly sucks at LSU. But Billy Napier versus Brian Kelly, most would say, I got to go with that guy that's won a bunch of flipping games.
Yeah, most would have gone South with Bend. Rich Rodriguez instead of Dabo Swinney,
too. Oh, for God's sake.
Most would have done that. Most go with the name.
It's Rich Rodriguez instead of Nick Saban, by
you
the way.
Can't, you
it
can't.
It was Alabama. It wasn't Clemson.
Like living proof of guys that go with the name. Okay?
No, I'm not. Okay. Obviously not. Because I'm going Billy Napier instead of Brian
because
Kelly.
Because he's in Florida right
no.
now. Or if he
no.
was in Georgia, you'd be if going. The,
if Brian Kelly was at Florida, he'd be doing backflips. Are
I would not be.
Me? Look what we got.
He's 60 years old. I don't want that.
That's ageism right there, man. I'm not sure you can do
argument.
That.
An old argument. I got to get into one other one. This I'm a little surprised by, and jump in on the Oklahoma part of this, Matt. Because,
right, it's Lincoln Riley's the bigger one in this. Yeah, right,
I agree with that.
Yeah, and Lincoln. Yeah, just the fact that Lincoln might have been interested in this job is huge to me. But
it's enormous.
Yeah, and I don't know whether I'm interested what Scott Strickland might ultimately say about this one day. He might have gotten his guy. But now to the Oklahoma side, because I heard one bit that it seemed like it had some legs to it. Believe it or not. Shane Beamer is under careful consideration in Norman, Oklahoma. Now throw another one at us that's also in play in Norman because that is a big, big job.
It is, but if Shane Beamer were in play at Oklahoma, they'd already hired him.
I suppose so.
So he could be a fallback candidate, certainly.
Right.
But he's not their number one
What
guy.
About Brett Venables? What about the
No,
other...
he'd also already be hired.
Yeah. Well, you're probably
my
right
guess
about
is,
that as
My
well.
Guess is both Miami and Oklahoma are both going after – Mario.
Mm-hmm.
That's the guess. And if either one of them can get him, then they'll go to their fallbacks.
Yeah. And I guess that does make sense because, look, anyone who wants to try it out, we're talking about Billy Napier versus Brian Kelly, you walk out and say Lincoln Riley just left and we hired Shane Beamer, people will be flipping and tripping. There is no doubt about it. But then I am curious if they're going to look at the D.C. of Georgia. Just some of the other guys, Brett Venables is certainly, I would think, a big target.
JJ, give us that jest right now, please.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Now, this is just for our entire audience, but specifically for JJ and Leon. Mm-hmm. Barry Jackson, who works at the Miami Herald, is just as keyed in as anyone down in South Florida, okay? He just reported, just tweeted out, the University of Miami will try to hire Mario Cristobal as the Hurricanes head coach in, quote, the coming days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. You zero in on your guy. You say goodbye to Manny. You let everything be all cleaned up and done. And I think you might have said this earlier in concert. You might announce an AD
and coach same time. Coach. You say, okay, our AD is Gino Toretta. Our coach is Mario Cristobal. They played together on the same team. It's a new era in Miami. Mm-hmm. You know, you're paying Mario $9 million a year, whatever you're going to pay him. We're doing things differently now. Here's where we are moving forward.
Mario better get what he wants, because leaving Oregon, a place that he reinstalled as a very good team in the Pac-12, he gets down to Miami, he's going to change the game down in South Florida.
And I think one thing this coaching carousel is proving at Oklahoma, at Miami, at Florida, at LSU, is how toxic apparently Lane Kiffin is. Not a sniff, a name drop, not an interview, nothing for Lane Kiffin, who just took Ole Miss to their first, 10-win season. Did Hugh Freeze ever win 10 there?
Oh, yeah, Eli did. Yeah.
No, it's their first time they've won 10 games in the regular season.
In the regular season.
Right. So he can, if they win their bowl game, it will be the first 11-win season ever.
So Lane Kiffin taking Ole Miss, who's played football for many, many years, to heights they've never seen, did not get a sniff for any of these jobs.
I wonder what the back channels are saying, and I don't know that we'll ever know, but if his agent did make inquiries, like we're learning right now that Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly were interested in Florida. We don't know the answer if Florida was interested in them, but maybe Kiffin was interested in these, and then we find out. But it does say that people are still just a little gun-shy of what Lane can do just in terms of the personality. He is a hell of a coach. He's displayed that in a short amount of time in Oxford. All right, we'll keep it rolling.
I truthfully cannot wait for Florida-LSU next year when Billy Napier wins that game. Not for you guys, for the people on the text line that are just calling me every name under the sun. I mean, just awful, rude things right now
being said. Do you realize how many things you have to, anticipate in your life because – you've gotten in this argument or that argument. Now you hate that one. Now you can't wait for this one to happen.
I mean, it's literally exhausting listening to you, seriously.
LSU is just going to get the absolute beating at the Swamp next year. Billy Napier Nation, I cannot wait for them to shake hands at midfield and for Napier to lay the smackdown on freaking Brian Kelly in his fake Southern accent next October.
I hope it happens. I really do. I'll be on that side of the argument, but you got to make a choice on that one. I'm pretty sure most people will be going in the other direction. Tulane Lager is who brought us here to Splits in Orange Park. We'll be here this afternoon and next Friday. And if you hear a Luke Bryan tune during our show, you got a chance to get registered for that autographed Tulane Lager. As a matter of fact, they're going to give another one of those away tonight right here at Splits in Orange Park.
This is XL Prime Time, brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010 XL.
We've been having a good time. Splits in Orange Park. That's where we were hanging out today. And a lot of people hang out at Splits. You come, you bowl, you got laser tag, you got the arcade, you got all kinds of cool stuff going on here. And tonight, the Luke Bryan Tulane Lager ladies will be out giving out some swag and registering folks to win that autographed Luke Bryan guitar from Tulane. That'll be anywhere from 8 o'clock on. So there's plenty of people that fill up Splits, that's for sure. Now my man Supa texts me and says, could Kiffin be an NFL coordinator? Well, he originally, if you go back in time, came through the NFL, son of Monty Kiffin.
He was here for a while
as an analyst.
He was quality control here, and he wasn't a very good coach. He was an immature guy here. That was told to me numerous times. But matured, then went to the Raiders, and we all know the infamous firing by Al Davis. But, yeah, he cut his teeth in the National Football League, but he does seem like he's more wired
college. He's not leaving a college head coaching job for an offensive coordinator spot.
The only reason Bowen got fired. Really quick, on the text line is on by Lifetime Enclosures. I want to clarify something, although I did appreciate this. This is from a Big D in Oceanway. Big D chiming in. Didn't really appreciate the insult of 60-year-old men could probably beat Hack in any sport except eating chicken wings.
All right. Actually,
oh,
and
my
I,
God.
I don't.
You, my man, Big D.
You can beat him in that, too, because he ain't eating chicken wings.
Yeah, I mean, boneless wings, Big D. My point on the 60-year-old comment, Dan Mullen, why did Dan Mullen get fired? Why did Gator fans want Dan Mullen out?
He was too old.
In large part, recruiting, right? Recruiting. He's not being a great recruiter. That was my biggest complaint with Bob Stoops. If you want somebody to get out there and reestablish Florida on the recruiting trail, I don't think 61-year-old Bob Stoops or 60-year-old Brian Kelly is the way to do it. Okay. I do think 42, 43-year-old Billy Napier is a better option in that regard. Nothing against 60-year-old head coaches. For crying out loud, Nick Saban's 70.
Yeah, but
I think he's doing just fine.
Right.
I just don't know how motivated a 60-year-old guy is going to be to hit the recruiting trail against Kirby.
Okay, hang on. Yeah. So that said, I understand what you're saying, okay? Now, would you agree with me that Notre Dame is probably the toughest place to get players in all college football?
I mean, yeah.
At a high level.
Well, I mean, yes? are we counting Stanford? Are we counting?
Yes, I'm counting Stanford. It's one of the toughest places. I would say top three.
Okay.
Toughest place to get it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Probably Stanford, Duke, and Notre Dame, right?
Northwestern.
Yeah.
But no question, right?
Yeah. Right.
Right. When Brian Kelly left, Notre Dame's recruiting class, five.
Right.
Number five in the nation.
Right.
The 60-year-old guy who can't recruit had the fifth highest ranked recruiting class in the nation.
Yeah. And by the way, when he's going to LSU, he's still 60 and still has the
same
task.
And he gets everybody in.
And still has the same task of recruiting.
And
right.
And I can read that off a list, too.
And could get anyone in.
And oh, my gosh.
And I can read that off a list, too. Here's my question to you. Where he was recruiting compared to where he's recruiting now, you will grant me there is a difference.
Yeah, it's easier.
No, I'm Midwest to South. There's a difference.
Yes, it's easier. That's what I'm saying.
All right. It's so easy that he thought he had to go in front of 8,000 people in a basketball arena last night.
Oh, my God. What does that have to do with anything?
And use a fake Southern draw.
What does it have to do with anything, Hack?
Because he thinks he needs to establish himself as a Southerner down here. He already did it 2 days into his job.
You think – wait a second.
Why did he do that last night?
Wait a second. You're telling
me – no, answer my question. Why did he do
that? I'm asking you a question. You're telling me that he got on that court and did a fake Southern accent because he wanted to recruit.
Yes, I think that was part of it. I think he needs to relate to these fan base. Yeah, absolutely.
He either had some Louisiana moonshine.
Yes!
And who knows what. But he definitely was trying to kiss the rear ends of Cajuns.
He was trying to kiss the butt of that fan base.
Of course he was.
I didn't say he wasn't.
Yeah,
of course he was.
So what did you say then prior to when you were yelling at me? I couldn't really understand, I guess.
He didn't do that for
recruiting,
Hack.
We're going to have to stop that because you're a yeller too.
He didn't do that for recruiting.
I disagree.
He did it for the fan base to feel good about him.
So he faked an accent for the fan base to feel good about him?
Yes!
I'm pretty sure that's 100%
But see, the best part is, though, you're going away from the reality of what you just said, that the 60-year-old man can't recruit. He's got the fifth-ranked class in the country right now.
When he's recruiting in Ohio and Michigan, albeit he's recruiting against Harbaugh, and he's recruiting against Ryan Day.
In Ohio State, right?
But with the ties that Saban has down here, the ties
and he's
Jimbo,
also recruiting with the Notre Dame academic standards.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Now he goes to LSU and he can do whatever he wants. Right. But, I mean, when you're competing against Georgia and Alabama and A&M, it's a different animal than what he's been dealing with. It is.
He was competing against them as well.
Right. He goes against the same players for them, too.
Yeah, everybody can laugh now. We'll see what happens during signing day.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, whatever. Hey, listen, when you go home, you find the argument that helps you win. I don't care. I'm just over here thinking Brian Kelly versus Billy Napier. I hope Billy Napier kicks his ass, but I also think Brian Kelly would have been anybody's better hire.
Right, I do, too. I'm a Florida alum. I hope Billy Napier goes 4-8 now in his first season just because of this. Seriously.
I am not rooting against
Billy Napier.
It's unreal,
man. It's unreal.
Urban Meyer wasn't a name from Utah either. Yeah. I'm sure there were a lot of more popular names.
He wasn't a name. He was 11-0 his last year there.
At a non-Power 5 school.
Right.
He won the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, Herb's a perfect example of coming in as an outsider and immediately recruiting with his program and winning. He's the perfect example of a guy coming from the outside.
100%.
Yeah, but that's neither here nor there.
Hey, y'all have fun with Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
I'm sorry Florida didn't hire him for you.
That's not what we're saying.
Honestly, have your own fight. Just have your own fight. Oh, there's one more wing. It's XL Primetime.
This is XL Primetime, protected by Preferred Roofing on 1010XL.
I have dipped myself in a pitcher of Tulane Lager over the break. Okay? I'm exhausted.
Oh,
I'm worn out. I just want to bowl.
Wait, I got to tell everybody this. I have to tell you people this. I have to say this, okay? Because Hack's argument when we left was the SEC schools don't recruit the state of California. So I just went over the Georgia roster. There's 8 guys from the state of California. Like 5 of them are 5-star guys that start. And Hack's response was, go ahead.
No, hold on. How many guys are on that roster?
85, 90, I don't know.
And you found 8 out of 90?
His response was, so there's only 10% from California.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's still 10%. Anyway.
And by the way, three of those guys went to IMG Academy in Brandon.
By the way, one's the best tight end in America, Brock Bowers. Yeah, one's a starting corner.
Again, I don't know what's
one
funny.
Should be the starting quarterback.
Are you on helium? I don't understand what's funny.
What's
three of those guys were from IMG Academy in Bradenton.
The one thing that happens whenever you have the big boys, doesn't really matter where they come from.
My God.
If they're a big boy, then the big boy schools are going to be in on them if they're good at their job in recruiting. And I think more than anything else, the exercise is pretty simple. He's an old dude in some people's eyes, and he's still recruiting his tail off. And we'll find out if he can do it at LSU. I mean, the beautiful thing about it is that one guy is an up-and-comer. The other guy has absolutely seated himself among the best in college football right now. And both of them are making a big shift in their careers. I never, ever would have thought a guy at Notre Dame would pick up and say, see ya, I'm going to Baton Rouge.
Never.
Yet it has happened.
Yeah.
And he is going to a place where I believe he can be successful. We'll find out whether his personality gets in the way of him being successful. But I know he's a pretty damn good coach.
Well, they'll be linked because obviously they got hired together. Yeah, they're going to play each other
and
every year. They'll be linked until Kelly.
And the other guy is
fired in 5 years.
Yeah, the other guy. You know, it's so funny because the other guy is considered a rising star who has passed up on other jobs, SEC jobs, Power 5 jobs.
NFL jobs.
Yeah, and has tried to pick his spot. I'm talking about Billy Napier.
Oh, okay.
Has tried to pick his spot, and Gator fans out there are hoping he's picked the right spot, and he's the football version of Billy Donovan, and that really could be what he is. You guys know I've listed his name for the last 2 or 3 years. I am a Billy Napier fan. But do I know whether he'll be successful or not? I have no idea.
Well,
is he more of a Jim McElwain or more of a Kirby Smart? Is he more of a Will Muschamp or is he more of a Jimbo Fisher? All these guys were assistants that came through either the Saban success tree or whomever, and we don't know whether or not they're going to make it. We have no clue.
I am intelligent enough to realize the news coming out of South Florida today. That is a big deal. If indeed Mario Cristobal to Miami may be happening, there are reports that there is a lot of behind-the-scenes talk that they're waiting for Oregon's game tonight against Utah. That game is tonight in the Pac-12 title game, and that after that game is played, Miami and Mario might have conversation. That would be the fireworks show that I talked about with Lane Kiffin going to Gainesville. Mario Cristobal to South Florida would be a fireworks show, recruiting-wise, perception-wise of the university. That would be a very, very big coup for Miami.
I've maintained all along is that I like the makings of Mario, everything he's done. You want to talk about, and I use the term reinstalled, and I think it's accurate, reinstalled Oregon in the conversation among the best in the country. Over a 2-year stretch, Maddie, over it, when Willie Taggart left Oregon to take the FSU job, that was 3 seasons ago, and Mario, they didn't know whether he would leave and go with Willie, and they were smart up there. They said, you keep this, you rebuild us, and Willie had done whatever.
Well, he was there for a year.
Yeah.
He was literally Mario was there for a year, and he already made an impact
on
the AD and the president there. They realized, all right, Willie's gone, we'll just elevate you.
Yeah, and he, in a short amount of time, now he hasn't won every game he's supposed to win, you can do all of that, but I just love the idea that guy has built himself, his name, his program, and all that stuff. And I told you guys, I would be surprised if Miami is willing to pull the staple out of the wallet and pry him away from Oregon. But
they're desperate
least,
now, Joe.
They're
2 decades in now to a – you know, you always joke about the Florida State lost decade or the Florida lost decade. They're 2 decades into
now. Yes, they are.
So they're desperate. They're ready to spend money right now.
And you see what – Mike Norvell appears to have something happening in Tallahassee, at least on the recruiting trail. You see what Florida's done with Billy Napier, other teams in the South, and then the ACC and SEC positioning themselves with either contract extensions – or new coaching hirings. If Miami brings Cristobal into the fold, that overshadows a large majority of what these other schools have already done.
And if we're just talking about the state of Florida, Norvell is inching up in the recruiting rankings. Mario immediately moves the meter down in South Florida. Napier needs to prove that he can do what everyone says they believe he can do. And then all of a sudden,
I'm a believer in
Billy. Well, I can tell you this: the fact that Napier and Chris, if it is Mario,
right,
are in the state now, it's going to be a lot harder for Alabama to come into Florida, for Georgia to come into Florida, for Ohio State to come into Florida. It's going to be much more difficult for Texas A&M to come into Florida because now you've got legitimate recruiters now, and if they can go mend relationships of what the problems were in previous years of both those schools,
right?
Yeah, it's and you got some guys that can recruit,
and if we can get somehow, some way, back to where each school is contending for their conference title annually, man, the heyday will be back in the Sunshine State because we haven't had this in a while. How many ACC championships have been won? You think about
How quickly it's already turned. It's already – in 2 weeks, it's already turned to hopefulness.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, it was, my God, the state of Florida, the teams are terrible. Yeah. Now it's, if Mario gets there, now it's – now look how quick they can
hope,
get back.
Hope and hope.
Yeah.
But think of how many ACC championships have been won without Florida State's or Miami's names on it, and think of how many SEC titles have been won in over a decade that hadn't had Florida's name on it.
13 years since they've won one.
Major.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Oregon has been left by Chip Kelly. Oregon got left after 1 year by Willie Taggart. Would Oregon and Nike and Phil Knight and all the buku dollars they have out there, would they pony up to give Mario Cristobal whatever he wants to keep him in Eugene, and would he stay in Eugene?
They might. They might. I mean, it's very hard. You know, Mario's Cuban. It's hard for him.
Right. My original thought
it's hard
is
for him to ignore that. I mean, that's where he grew up. Now, his wife's from the West Coast, all right? So that's going to be a draw as well. But, I mean, he graduated from Miami. He grew up in Miami. He's Cuban. It's going to be very difficult for him to say no to them. If they say, we're going to give you $10 million, Mario.
Right. Because that was my original thought. He rebuilt that. Why would you leave and go somewhere where you have challenges? And I apologies to Big Sirs, Romberg, a couple of Hall of Famers, and a Hall of Fame fan, and JJ. But you leave an atmosphere in Eugene that's pretty damn special. You go to a place where there isn't the on-campus stuff that you need. That nine, however many million dollars it might take annually to get him, may also mean that Mario looks them in the eye and say, okay, guess what? How much did that facility cost in Gainesville? 100 and what was it?
Well, they have one now. It's not like what Florida has.
No, it's a bubble now.
Well, they have a football facility too.
Right.
It's not like what Florida and Alabama have. But yeah, you're right. He very easily could say, yes, I'll come be the coach. See what they're building down in Gainesville?
Right.
Maybe
my recruiting budget needs to be there, and my ability to hire assistants needs to be there.
And maybe this is me being short-sighted. Maybe it is. I just think I look at Miami and playing in a stadium that's not yours, 45 minutes
hurts,
away
dude.
From campus.
It hurts.
There's no getting around that, and I don't know what they can do about that.
No, it's
that's
not just
a
you.
Problem. I don't care who the coach is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just you. It's what I just said to Matt, that not having that atmosphere in Eugene – compared to not having a stadium on campus? Are you kidding? That's amazing.
I think it's difficult for recruiting outside of the state of Florida. Really outside of the state of Miami, outside of Dave Broward and Palm Beach. But when you're recruiting those three counties, those kids, man, all they care about is South Florida.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. Those kids grew up with the Canes. You know, the Canes are still ingrained in them. So you can still get those guys. But to Hack's point, it certainly hurts when you go to try and get a kid from Georgia. It certainly hurts when you go and try and get a kid from Texas because that's difficult. It's difficult to say, yeah, you're going to be here. This is where we're going to practice, blah, blah, blah. Then on game day, we're going to get on a bus, and if traffic's right, we'll get there in 45 minutes.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, at the very least, South Florida kids are used to that as well. Not
right.
Just not, the U may not be ingrained in them because they haven't won enough.
The U is still the U down there.
Right, but they are used to that. Hey, I see them at Hard Rock.
Yeah.
I don't see them on campus.
Yeah.
But the kids that grew up with them are kind of like the kids that grew up here in Jacksonville. All they know is losing, right? They might have grown up with Miami.
Yeah.
They grew up with Miami during the Randy Shannon and the Al Golden and the Manny Diaz and a sprinkling of success with Mark Richt.
Right. That's what I say.
And I don't know if – kids in high school right now – we're not alive the last time Miami won a national title.
Right,
Miami has won national titles in the Orange Bowl in Little Havana. Like, I think that whole stadium is not close to campus is super overrated.
Well, but JJ, back then, you weren't going cross country. You weren't on social
media.
You
just go a few blocks.
You weren't convincing these kids, let's all do it together.
Not that far away from campus.
Yeah, and let's not do it here. So that's the
bad. It wasn't on campus stadium.
No, it wasn't, but it's not that far away is my point.
It was the Orange Bowl.
The Orange Bowl wasn't that far away from campus. It's not like it is now.
The Orange Bowl had the mystique. Compared to, what is it, Joe Robbie, pro player, Hard Rock, whatever it is.
Yeah, but there's no mystique there because they're not winning. That's the only reason for that. I just think these kids are – you talked about the Jaguar fans. You know what, though? There's still a rabid core of Jaguar fans here. Rabid, no matter what happens.
Yep.
It's the same thing there.
All right, we are close to wrapping it up from Splits right here in Orange Park. We've been hanging out. This is a great place to hang out, they say. The place gets busy at night, so if you want to come in, get in early. The Tulane Lager ladies will be out here a little bit later on with you with your chance to win an autographed Luke Bryan Tulane Lager guitar along with some other swag that they will be giving out. We'll be back here next Friday as well, so you can make plans right now to come hang out with us.
Hey, remember this?
Shake! Crossover! Step back! That's the buzzer!
We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose. We just crushed their face.
Lemieux heading up ice. Here he comes! Here he comes! Mario Lemieux! Hang on! He scores! You're gonna love it!
Let's take a trip back in time with Tulane Lager.
To Rogers, something like that. Rogers gets it the other way. He's thrown down. We got a flag. The game's not over. Grabbed it by the face mask. That was Devin Taylor.
Personal foul. Face mask. Number 98 defense.
For the winning kick by Myers. Devin Taylor. I don't know. Did he get the face mask?
Well, he hit it. It looked like it. It happened so fast. I could see why they threw the flag. I thought so. He played.
All right, well, the ball is spotted.
Yeah, he hits the face mask.
At the 39.
Can the receivers get far enough down the field?
Rogers in trouble.
It's going to get there.
He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rogers with a walk-off touchdown.
That was a great moment, and we were having a great moment up in Atlanta when that went down, 2015. And how many of those can you remember Aaron Rodgers doing? And it was just against multiple teams. Well, this was against the Detroit Lions, and we rolled up to Atlanta, the ATL, for the SEC Championship game. And we were sitting in the Hard Rock right there on Peachtree, main drag, and we're like, watch him throw a Hail Mary. And dang if he didn't.
So to set the scene for you, it was me, Joe, and Gibby. So we are in the car for 5 hours together. What a ride that was. From Jacksonville to Atlanta. We get into Atlanta about 9 o'clock at night, park the car, and then we are in desperate search of food and booze. Let's be honest, at that time of night, it was a Thursday night, was the game. And we get in right at like the start of the fourth quarter. Turned out to be a great night, as you mentioned. Aaron Rodgers had two Hail Marys that year.
Oh, yeah.
Had the Detroit Hail Mary in the regular season.
Was it Arizona?
And had the Arizona Hail Mary in the postseason. So, that was a good time. And, of course, Alabama would destroy Florida that next day in 2015.
Yeah, that kind of became a regular thing there for a while up in the ATL. Like we said, Gators haven't won one of those SEC prizes since the O's. Well, one of the guys that knows all about that and is ready for it to change. Let's say hello to our man, Hayes Carline.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit TireOutlet.com/careers, equal opportunity employer.
So we go from Splits in Orange Park as we are hanging out in the OP to Island Wing with our man Hayes. What is up, Hayes?
What is up, fellas? I am here at Island Wing Company on Southside. My main man Jacob is here taking great care of us. And I tell you what, it's always the place to be. They've got some, we always tell you about, you know, the great food. They've got a puppy menu now. A puppy
oh,
menu.
Really?
You can bring your
very
dog,
cool.
Get a steak option, a chicken option, a seafood option for your dog out on these beautiful patios. They've got two of them. It's beautiful weather, and we're certainly excited about it. You could also get a gift card here if you're looking for a stocking stuffer. So lots of great things going on at Island Wing Company. And we're excited for today's Frangie Show. Frank is on his way to L.A. to document the Jaguars' tremendous upset over the Rams.
So he is flying to Los Angeles. So it will be Lauren Brooks and myself holding down the fort on the Frangie Show.
You know, you mentioned the steak, chicken, and seafood option for the Hound. I think I'm going to order off of that menu. That sounds pretty good.
Kidding.
I could probably go. Just go ahead and serve it up to me on three big bowls, and I will have a feast. You know, the thing is, Hayes, we were just talking about the SEC championship game. So before we get to the Jaguars with you real quick, you know, it's been a minute since Florida has won that championship, and we've seen some great upsets. Will we see one in your mind tomorrow afternoon?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a pretty chalk day. I think this is Georgia's year. I didn't see it coming. I picked Alabama before the season to defend, but I don't see that happening. Georgia's just defensively on a level that I haven't seen in this age of targeting and the defense being so hamstrung by the rules. What Georgia's able to do, I think, is going to give Alabama a lot of problems. And so I think Georgia wins. And Georgia is the clear top seed and big-time favorite in the college football playoff.
You know, hey, as I said yesterday, the Jaguars have about as good a chance winning in L.A. on Sunday as I do becoming an astronaut in the next year to 2 years. I want to amend that one real quick. If the Rams commit, like, 12 penalties and have three turnovers, and I really mean that, if they, like, play awful like Buffalo did here in Jacksonville, it is the NFL. Anything can happen. But assuming the Rams play coherently on Sunday, I cannot imagine a scenario where the Jaguars win.
I can't either. It's going to take the Rams having an absolute meltdown like Buffalo did. And again, you know, the Buffalo game taught us that you can never say the Jaguars have no chance. I mean, so they certainly have a chance. But I think it is to the point where the Rams would have to be -2 in turnover ratio. The Jaguars would have to have fewer penalties. And defensively, I think they'd have to have an outstanding game. I just don't think you can count on the Jaguar offense to do much. I mean, when they've yet to score more than 23 points in a game. So could they win? Yeah, they can win. But, it would take everything going right. And that's very unlikely to happen. So, unfortunately, I think they're going to take their 10th loss of the year on Sunday. I mean, to be honest, I haven't even really entertained. I like to sometimes be like, well, what if? Well, what if they win? What if they win? I haven't even allowed myself to get there this week because it just feels like there's such a little chance of the Jaguars going out there and beating the Rams.
That does signal the sound of a beaten man, which is unfortunate because you're as optimistic as they come, and I hate it, that's for sure. But we'll see what happens. All right, Hayes, we will be listening. You guys have fun, and if you say coconut shrimp before we say goodbye to you,
coconut
we'll
shrimp.
All be happy. There you go. There, perfect.
There
perfect.
It
all
is.
Right, man. Enjoy.
Right.
We'll be listening.
Take care, guys.
All right. So, you know, look, like Coach Campo was talking about this yesterday with us and try and get some tempo going on the offensive side. He shot me a little article today, and I agree with it. You've got to change. First off, there's no identity offensively on this football team. Mm-mm. And if James Robinson is not 100%, we all know it's probably not going to go very well at all. But let's just say he plays. Try and get a little tempo going. Hold the ball. Give your defense a chance to rest. Give your defense a chance to make some adjustments. Play some zone and see if you can't get to Matt Stafford and rattle him. But, man,
the problem is if you go tempo like that, yeah. You go 3-and-out.
Oh, I know. I know.
Literally, your defense is off the field for 2.5 minutes.
It's true.
Leon and I will have the fifth quarter for you on Sunday. Should get underway probably about 9 o'clock Sunday night, 2 hours after the Jaguars and the Rams go final. Before we get out of here,
Friday night. Best of luck
tonight. Three high school teams in our area still playing. Trinity Christian probably on the road right now. They are heading to Orlando to play Orlando Christian Prep. You got Baker County, who definitely is on the road by now. They're probably getting close to Miami. They're on the road tonight in the 5A Final Four against Miami Central. So best of luck to Kevin Mays and the Baker County Wildcats. And the game you'll hear tonight on 1010XL and 92.5 FM, the Bulls Bulldogs heading down to play Coco. So Bulls, Baker, and Trinity all on the road tonight. Win tonight, and they are in the final game, the state championship next week.
And if you enjoyed our 3 hours of college football talk, the final Saturday kickoff show is tomorrow, 11 a.m., 11-1. We'll be banging it out, man.
And you'll hit all the championship
games,
which some of them will be kicking off while you guys are
we'll
on.
Break them down.
So definitely check it out. Saturday kickoff show with Matt Hayes, Terry Novell, and Gibby will have the high school kickoff show tonight at 6.
From 6 o'clock to 7:30, I'll be a part of that, and then Bowls Coco at 7:30 this evening.
All right, good job. Thanks to Tulane Lager. Don't forget the Tulane Lager ladies will be out here later on tonight giving away a bunch of swag, along with that autographed Luke Bryan guitar, so make sure you check it out right here at Splits in Orange Park, and we'll be here next Friday, also up at Salty Pelican next week. So we had a great time. Joe C., Ryan the Hacker Green, Matty Hayes, Big Sur, and back to JJville we go.